Well, I met Kevin Martin at the celebrity dinner. That, I'm not sure what year that it would have been, but it would have been the in past 2000 anyway.
Okay.
And so we weren't on the same team,
mm-hmm.
but I met him that day, and we had a very nice talk because I taught at Nate for 6 years,
mm-hmm.
and that's where he became a curler. He was from Viking or Wainwright, I believe.
Yeah,
I
think.
And anyway, his coach for all those years was Jules Ochar. And Jules and I talked together. Well, we played baseball against when we were young. He was from Lac La Biche. I was from Athabasca. And then we went to university together, and he was a good baseball player. And then he got a job at Nate with the same year. We started there, and of course, he was Kevin's coach, and
okay.
And Jules was the first fellow ever to get these curlers to become athletes. If you remember back in the day, even Hector Bay and those fellows, they would have drink over on the side here, smoke a
yeah.
cigarette.
Exactly.
But Jules changed all that
for
all those fellows, and
mm-hmm.
so that's why Kevin Martin became such. Well, when he was at Nate, he won the college championship across mm-hmm. Canada,
okay.
and he was a provincial champion, and Jules just stayed with him when he got into
mm-hmm.
into the nationals and the Briars and on all that. So yeah, mm-hmm. I know Kevin.
Okay. Oh, interesting. And then you were at the golf tournament.
Yes. Yeah.
And saw him, and you were there as a celebrity yourself.
Yes. I don't know whether I was a real celebrity or not, but I guess they thought I was because I'd coached across Europe,
mm-hmm.
and I was on the inducted into the Wall of Fame at the U of A in 1988 for playing football and wrestling at the U of A. Played in the first ever national championship in the Vanier Cup in 1965, and had a good game. We didn't win, but we did everything but win.
Mm-hmm.
But, and I won 5 intercollegiate championships, and that's all you're allowed 5 years of eligibility.
Oh, okay.
And I'd represented Canada at the World Championships in 1969, so I guess they thought I was a celebrity, but they went and had a very good day, a wonderful day.
Oh, that's good.
And even hit the ball pretty well.
And it was here at the golf course.
Right, that's
beautiful,
right.
Beautiful,
yeah.
beautiful golf course.
It is.
Yeah. So recently, Aspen View Public Schools made the motion to close Rochester School, and you very passionately, why do you feel that Rochester School should be saved?
I really think it's a school of necessity because it's, and especially for those children K to 6, because it's too long of a bus ride.
Mm-hmm.
It's over 50 kilometers from the school to Athabasca,
mm-hmm.
and it's about 30 minutes getting them from to the right place in Athabasca, the right school. And some of them live out away from Rochester, so for some of those children, it would be a 2-hour bus ride
mm-hmm.
every morning and night. And that's too much to ask. Children would get sick of that.
Mm-hmm.
Parents wouldn't want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody would want to do it.
I mean, that's a good way to turn a child off of education.
It is, yes, no, for sure.
Okay.
So it's a school of necessity, and the school is there, and it's a beautiful school.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a wonderful library. They've got all the technology you could possibly want. They've got a gym. They've got a rink. They've got a ski hill just down the way. They've got soccer fields, baseball fields, agricultural arena just a little ways away, just in the back. It's actually on the school grounds.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's everything there,
mm-hmm.
snowshoes and skis and all the equipment you could possibly want. And it's in a beautiful spot, and it's got a nice, very nice playground for young children.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when I first got there, we built a new playground for the children with...
Oh, when you were teaching there?
Yeah, when I was teaching there.
Okay.
I remember I had a work day, and the ladies, we had a committee working on the playground committee, and we went and we got the best materials, the post. But now those things are taken down because you can't use it. It's got to be plastic. It's got to be safe. It's got to be approved. And so, and then I remember building again, putting them in and hauling the sand and getting rid of the old metal climbers that they have and so on. But and now it's as good as any playground you'd have anywhere. So I just feel it's it would be wrong to, and it's certainly got a history there, but the community has to get together. Because if the school board decides that the school is not viable, then the school will close. And what will happen with that, I don't know. But if the school closes, the community will die, because that happens in every community if the school closes, the community dies, and then the store is already up for sale, and the lady would like to see it owned, and she doesn't want a terrible high price for it, because she knows how it is important. Norma Corby at the store that she runs it. So,
yeah, because I wouldn't want my child to ride the bus for 2 hours, so I would move.
Yes, yeah, that's right. And, and that's what'll happen. And there is there's a great opportunity, there's potential, because it's not a corporate farm situation, because almost every quarter section around there, like all the way to Athabasca, has marginal land. You might have 80 acres of cropland, good land, farmland, and then you have marginal land where there might be swamp or there might be hills or there might be gullies or whatever, but there's lots of muskeg, and that can be used for cattle, for ranching. But there's, with all the changes in agriculture and the way that they spray and fertilize and take out all the fences and take out all the little spots, and where there used to be brush and cattle pasture, now it's farmland, and there just isn't the cattlemen, and this part of Alberta is the cattle belt of the world. There's more cattle per acre in this, from north of Edmonton up to say north of Athabasca here. The more cattle per acre than any other place in the world.
Like, oh wow!
Texas, there's lots. There's lots of places. But they need hundreds of acres.
Yeah. They have scrub grass. They don't have. Yeah.
But here you can in the summertime you can almost pasture one animal per acre.
Yeah.
And if it's good land, a little more. If it's if you want to fertilize, more than that. So, but there are farms available for sale, and there are people that want to live in the rural areas, but it isn't happening right now, but at one time a family on almost every quarter section. Now there's probably a farm family living on in every 20th quarter, and so it's too bad that it happens. But I guess that's the way of the world, and they call it progress. But I don't know whether that's really progress or not.
Okay.
So we had a session the other night where there was a fellow from Ontario, Alberta?
Ontario.
And they have a wonderful school there. It's called the Farm School. I don't know whether that's what Rochester needs, but they're working on it now. But this gentleman put on a session that there was a link, you could go on and watch it from home, or I went down to the school and watched it on the big screen. And he did a wonderful job. They have everything there. They have 4-H calves, they have cow-calf pairs, they have sheep, they have apiary, honey, the children look after the bees and the gardening and the crops it's more than just they do more than some agriculture schools do, I think. So it's, and you say you have a niece there.
My cousin actually, her two daughters are in it, but yeah, and what I like about it is it's not just that they learn how to handle the animals and feed them and whatever, every year they elect a manager, and they have a treasurer, and they have secretary, they learn how to manage the money.
And every one of those operations, like it doesn't matter the bees or the growing of food, or the crops or the 4-H cows, or the sheep or the whatever it is, everybody's involved, and they learn the business side of it.
Yeah.
And it's a great school. I don't know whether that's what Rochester, but something similar to that would be good. Because there are lots of intensive farming operations around the area that would love to take part. Like Maury's they're going to be milking 400 cows, and they're not far away. And the Maury's all went to the school. I taught their children, I taught their grandchildren, and now they're one of the boys is getting married, and he's marrying a vet who's a veterinarian at. And they've gone together for a long time, and so they're going to be living right there. So and we've had several when I was a principal there, and since they've had, I think there's three people have gone through and become veterinary.
Oh wow!
Students or veterinary medical doctors, anyway, and that's very difficult to get into. And that's just part of it. You know, we've had some of their medical doctors and some that are lots of engineers and umpteen dozens and dozens of teachers in the engineering field and business world. And so there's been lots of success there. And there's nothing better than a small school. But if they're too small, maybe they're just too small because you can't offer much.
Yeah.
When I was there, we had over 100. We had as many as 175 at one time.
Students.
And we offered just everything that any junior high school would offer. And when the students went to Athabasca, they were paired, and it was school education was serious business, and they performed there and did well and went on and. And many of our students from Rochester not only went into university or Nate or college, and they did well academically, but they represented their institutions in drama, and many of them in sports. They played volleyball. We had people go and play for the college volleyball teams, basketball teams, hockey teams, university football, university basketball, more than any other junior high in the whole area. And so, and that's because of, we had small school, but children, they gained confidence, and they overachieved, I guess you would say. They overachieved, and they had great success in their junior high, their high school, and their college career. So so I know the good part of it, the community has to get together with the school board and the school and help. And that's what's going on in Ontario School down in
Southern Alberta.
Because
Ontario is the same. It's just a little dot on the map.
And they don't have that many students either. I don't think they have more than 25 students.
Something like that, it's not a very big school, so you took part in the 100th anniversary of Rochester School. So how old is the school now?
I believe it was 112, or 1912 when it was first started as a school.
Oh, so 110 years.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
110, yeah.
Yeah.
And they had me as the guest speaker.
At that, 110 years ago, was it where the school is now?
On the same area, but it was just a little ways away. It was a log building.
Oh, okay.
It was just a one-room school. And, of course, as the community grew, the school grew. And it was built in about four or five different stages. And when I was there, of course, the population was growing. And there was about 150 when I started, and it grew. And they, so Alberta Learning, or the building side of things, they did a total school evaluation and built on.
Okay.
And we We took K to 6 up to Prairie. We the buses came to Rochester, the junior high got on, mm-hmm. and the others went to, that was before Prairieville was turned into a, because it had been closed in 1977. And that was my old home, that was mm-hmm. where I went to school mm-hmm. for the first 10 years of my life, was Prairieville.
Right.
And lots of, that, there was a small school. In grade 9, there was only two of us. And yeah, and well, for the first 10 years, we never had a gym. And then I guess the last year they had built the newer Perryville school, but the principal didn't know any much about sports, and so he never opened the gym. We never played inside, so we never had a gymnasium.
Never
played badminton or volleyball or basketball or any of those things.
Mm-hmm.
I think he used to let them in sometimes, and they'd play floor hockey, and it was pretty wild.
So what one-room school is on your property? Which school is that?
Willow Ridge. Mm. And that was started in the 20s. People first moved there, our neighbors just down the way. I think they came in about 1912, but they didn't build a school until mm-hmm. there was a few more people in the area.
Right. And you called it a township school? Is that what you...
Well, they called a... I don't know whether... every township had a school, was marked with, they had to have a school section where there could be a school, could be built there.
Okay.
Now, whether it was always there, I don't know. It depend on the terrain. But, okay. But yeah, there's every township had a school section.
And you said a township was considered 20 sections of land?
36.
36, okay.
36.
So within that 36 yeah. square block, there had to be a school, mm-hmm. and then, so that's why there were so many mm-hmm. little schools everywhere. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, and of course, it was really, the surveyors, it was kind of metric mm-hmm. way back then, even, because a school section was 6 miles or 10 kilometers
mm.
square,
mm-hmm.
and it was and there was a township or sorry a road allowance
mm-hmm.
going north and south every 2 miles
mm-hmm.
and east to west it was 1 mile,
right?
And so there was a road allowance, and those road allowance were metric as well, but they were 66 feet. And mm-hmm. but now the county has to build a proper road, you need more mm-hmm. than 66 feet. You know, so you have
right.
a wide enough top and the right slope on the ditches and an actual ditch. So they like to have 100 feet. They take 17 feet on either side if they can buy it off the landowner. But a lot of landowners, they want to. They bought 160 acres, a quarter, 160 acres. You know, mm-hmm. that old song, I got 160 acres in the valley. Anyway, some farmers don't like to give up that 16 and a half or 17 feet, they call it,
mm-hmm.
because then they no longer have a full section.
Right.
So anyway, but mm-hmm. Yes, and I was involved in, I was the editor-in-chief of the Rochester and District community or the history book,
mm-hmm.
and we took in Perryvale, Rochester, Tawakna, and part of Nestaw. They had come, the history book had been written from old Westlock and then Clyde and up to some okay. part of Nestaw and so on and so on. So we included all that. So we all learned an awful lot about schools and
mm-hmm.
In the Rochester area at one time, in the history book area, there it took in Perryville, Rochester, Twatton, and so on. There were over 60 schools, I believe, 60 little schools.
Right.
And when we wrote the book, there was only and all of those 60 schools probably had an average of 20 students per school.
No.
So that was 1,200 students.
Yeah.
So there was a quarter. The people lived, there was a family on nearly every quarter section.
Mm-hmm.
Not, they used to say that, but
mm-hmm.
not quite. But And then they would have larger families. You know, mm-hmm. Some people didn't have any, but some people too.
I know people that had 18 kids.
Yeah, you betcha.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Large families, and so there was probably, in the area, there was 1,200 children. Mm-hmm. Now, when they got to grade 9 or they were 16, 15, and they needed them at home, they stayed home and worked on the farm.
Mm-hmm.
Or they went away and got a job. They went to the sawmills and worked.
Mm-hmm.
But, and then when the roads got better and people would go and live in the, they'd go to school, they'd either stay at the uncle's or right. aunt's or whatever
mm-hmm.
In Athabasca or somewhere near the school. There may not have been 1,200 students going to school during that time, they would come to school for a while anyway, mm-hmm. and then when they got to 14 or 15, they would quit. But
right.
but anyway, but when it's interesting because there were 60 schools and a lot of students, let's say at mm-hmm. least 1,000. But when we wrote the history book, there was only one school left, and that was Rochester, and it had 130 students.
Wow.
Now, there was some went in Athabasca, so there was another 20 probably going to high school in mm-hmm. West Walker, Athabasca. But how things change, that was really something. But schools were always important in the area, but the only one left was Rochester, and the next one to the north was Athabasca,
mm-hmm.
because Perryville was closed. Taunton was closed,
mm-hmm.
and all the little schools around.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when Perryville School centralized, that would have been 1948, there was about 7 little schools went to Perryville.
Right.
And Rochester centralized around the same time. All the little school, how one little school closed, mm-hmm. closed, and they came to Rochester. And Minook, I don't think they ever did centralize it. Taunton did, and Athabasca did.
Mm-hmm. So way back before the county was the county, and they ran the school division, mm-hmm. who ran those little one-room schoolhouses? Who was...
Well, it was the improvement district of the time. Now, our downtown Perryville, it was... in Minook, it was the district of Nelson. They were improvement districts.
Okay.
They weren't... It wasn't the county... Athabasca didn't become a county until 1959.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, I believe.
Yeah.
And I can't remember because I'm 80 years old, but I was the MC when they celebrated 50 years as a county, and it was held at the multiplex.
Okay.
And it was quite a do, quite a gathering, quite a... because there was a lot of history there, a lot of good things had happened. I do know that, but when you start talking about Willow Ridge, that's what I was going to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Willow Ridge was, the school was in the 20s that they built a school, and the people in the area just built it. They might have got a few dollars or seed money to buy desks or some maps or whatever.
Okay.
But I've got some paper at home of the fellow who was he was on school board,
mm-hmm.
and his daughter gave me the papers, and they would have $2 for sports equipment.
Oh,
they could buy a ball and a bat.
Right,
that was all they had, and other things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it talked about the school. But anyway, Willow Ridge, which I probably know as well as any of the schools, and know quite a bit about Perryville, but I know they had a school, and in 1934 it burned down.
Mm.
It was hit by lightning.
Oh.
I guess they never had lightning or after. And so my grandmother was the school teacher. My grandmother had come to this area and taught school in Minook, and then Lewiston and then Willow Ridge, and then over by Barhead, what's the little place north of Barhead, north of Fort Assiniboine up in there. Anyway.
Okay.
She taught there because there weren't jobs. Anyway, and then, of course, in Caribou Range, which was west of Rochester, or west of Perryville, Georgia Lake, oh. Narrow Lake, and I went to school when our house burned down, and I stayed, that's in the story already.
Yep.
But in 35 they built it, and again they had to rebuild a school, mm-hmm. and of course, my grandmother was a school teacher, my grandma Sullivan was a school teacher, my grandma Spears was the secretary for the school area, school, and so they went to the district of Nelson, which was an improvement district, and they needed some money, some seed money to start building the school. Mm-hmm. They wanted to hire one fellow to be the head carpenter, and they borrowed $500, and they had to sign a document saying they would pay it back when they, and they did. And of course, my grandparents took out logs. They saw mm-hmm. the log, took out the log, saw the number.
Mm-hmm.
Both sets of grandparents, my aunt and uncle, or my uncles on each side, my mm-hmm. dad, my uncle, my on the one side, an uncle on the other side, and they hauled it up. We got pictures of them hauling the logs and going through a sawmill. And,
wow.
And anyway, but then the $500 was probably, they did put a hardwood floor in it, mm-hmm. and I'm sure that was to buy the, there was no documentation of mm-hmm. that I could find of what they spent that $500 on, but they had to put a hardwood floor, and of course they needed windows, mm-hmm. and they needed doors, and they needed a heater, mm-hmm. and that would just about take care of $500.
Yeah.
They bought some, blackboard and some of the.
So your family probably donated the lumber.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the money would have gone
The lumber and the labor. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And of course they, so in 35 they were ready to go to work again.
Wow.
My grandmother was a teacher again. And they used a building. It was a granary mm-hmm. where the children came and learned when the school was
done. Right. Wow.
It was a granary that my grandfather had pulled in. They made a schoolhouse out mm-hmm. of it.
Well, you have to do. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The school was important.
Mm-hmm.
The school was farming was because that kept bread on the table and. Mm-hmm. And you had a cow, and you tilled the milk, and you had, but you raised your own eggs and your own meat, and you shot a moose when you could, mm-hmm. and a deer. But schools were very important, and community functions. They used to have family dances in at different places. And it seemed back then, just about everybody could play an instrument. I know mm-hmm. my grandfather Spears could play the fiddle.
Mm.
And my grandmother Spears played the piano, and mm-hmm. the people would come from miles around, and they would have a dance, and maybe the next month they would go with somebody else. So, but people learned to dance, and they learned to sing, and they learned to get together. And
mm-hmm.
in the winter time, they always talk about winter time. They would come, and before they left home, they would have a wagon or a sleigh in the winter time, and they would have. Sides on the sleigh, and they might have a wagon box on the sleigh,
right?
And they would heat rocks,
right?
And they would those rocks would hold their heat for quite a long, and they'd put them under blankets, and they'd sit there with their feet
right
to stay warm.
Stay warm.
Good morning. They would keep their those rocks would still be warm when they went to go home at night.
Oh wow!
Start up their horses again, and mm-hmm. and they'd go home.
Yeah.
They'd probably have picked up a neighbor. There'd be six or eight of them, and they'd be singing on the way home and whatever. So.
Yeah,
yeah, those were the days.
And everybody knew how to waltz, and everybody knew how to do mm-hmm. all these. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. They did, yeah. And if they had the room, they'd do square dance.
Yep. Okay.
And you were talking to my wife the other day. Well, mm-hmm. we had a good neighbor, Morris Hanlon. She probably told the story about mm-hmm. the square dancing, did she?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, and so. They kind of revived that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Hanlon, he could call, and he had tape music and so on. And my wife, she got involved in helping, teaching the dancing, because she loved dancing.
Mm-hmm.
And, And I think she taught me how to dance. And became, her and I became a very good dance couple together. Mm-hmm. But they, and then we had somebody sew the little costumes, and they had little
the crinoline and the
They had, the girls had the skirts and the mm-hmm. fluffed up a little bit, and the boys had red vests and the cowboy hat. And they
little,
would travel
for
miles and miles, and people just, especially the older people, they just absolutely loved it
mm-hmm.
because it was they knew the music and they listened to the. And and that was brought up the other day. I went to a friend of mine who's a very good athlete and a nice fellow, and has a good. He's worked for the government. He's a CAO with one of the departments with the provincial government now. But anyway, it was his 50th birthday, and he was a very good athlete and a good student. And so they were talking about that. With Bonnie
mm-hmm.
about the dancing, the square dancing, and what fun it was, and you know they didn't really want to do it, but because people were so nice, they did it. And they loved now they love the fact that somebody got them into getting up and dancing and having fun and do-si-do when around you go. And
I can do that too.
Some square dancing and
mm-hmm.
and so on. So that's the dance class that I had, and
mm-hmm.
and of course. We were taught social dancing at the university, and that was one of the great things we did, more so than some of the other activities they had sometimes. We never carried on with them, but mm-hmm. it didn't matter. But and Bonnie always loved that. She loved teaching dancing. And
mm-hmm.
when I was principal and vice principal at the high school and she was teaching there, she'd always come and get me to show the kids how to dance. Some of those kids 50 years old. Oh, Mr. Spears, I remember when you and Mrs. Spears danced. Showed them how to do the
mm-hmm.
the waltz and the
mm-hmm.
and the two-step. And I guess mm-hmm. the little bit of foxtrot, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're doing that, then you do a little cha-cha-cha. Everybody loves mm-hmm. the cha-cha-cha.
What do you think is the greatest lesson you've learned in your life?
I think it is to treat people well. Mm-hmm. To treat people well and follow the golden rule. You know, you treat people the way you like to be treated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've done so many things and work with so many children, and there's an old saying, and I used to tell it to my students and on some of my talks, and it goes like this: it's a 10 little words, and it was, if you remember that, and you have the get up and go and the ambition, and the 10 little words are, if it is to B, it is up to me, or you can say us.
Mm-hmm.
So if it is to be, it is up to us.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's something that I always told, and it's very true.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to get something to happen, you have to get started, get some help, work together, work as a team,
mm-hmm.
and you can make a difference in this world.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what... But I guess the golden rule is you have to treat people well and get involved, be a team player, and all of those things. And I did it all my life as an athlete, as a worker, and
mm-hmm.
because I remember working in the lumber business, mm-hmm. sawing logs, and cutting fallen trees, sawing logs, sawing lumber, piling lumber, and then the summer we'd plane lumber, and,
mm-hmm.
and of course did that, and then of course we had a boxing club. We had a real fine gentleman who was our boxing coach, and he was always very, very cautious that nobody was ever mismatched and so on. But of course you had to get up there. My older brother Neil was a very good boxer, and he went quite a ways on the steps to the Golden Gloves.
Okay.
But those fellows, you know, they probably did it 300 days a year. Was out here, we did it in the winter time. but I think I told you the first event ever held at the new, it's gone now, the community hall, which is where the bylaw is now. It was, the community center, and the first event ever held there was a boxing card, and all this, all the places. There was a Barhead and Jarvie, Westlock, I think Dunstable was there.
Oh, okay.
Rochester, Athabasca had a couple, and Perryville, or Willow Ridge, really. All the kids were from Willow Ridge. And so, yeah, it was quite a thing. It was a packed place, but I remember that the place wasn't finished yet. Mm-hmm. But they had, Perryville had a ring, and they set the ring up, and the place was crowded. And I remember I was pretty shy. That was my first match ever, and I boxed a fellow from, I guess he was from Jarvie or something.
I think you said Jarvie, yeah.
Dapper Jarvie.
Okay. Yeah.
And anyway, I remember, mm-hmm. they got a cloak on you.
The hood and the,
you're supposed to walk down.
Do the jabs.
Climb, yeah. I don't think I did that.
Yeah.
But it got in the ring, and you look around, here's all these people who are cheering. But anyway, I won my match, and my brother won his match, and quite a few of our club guys. And there was four awards they handed out, and I forget who presented them, but there was one for best boxer and best left hand, best conditioned athlete. I forget what the other one was, but my brother won as the best conditioned athlete, okay. And I won for the best left hand. Now, I don't know how I ever did that, but.
Are you left-handed? Are you
southpaw? No, I was southpaw.
Okay.
But our trainer, he used to come at noon, and we'd go downstairs in the school, the classroom, the grade 7-8 room, had a basement underneath it. And we'd go down there, and of course there was nothing there, but we would train, and you'd have just a pad here, and so. But the other guy, we work together with your buddy, and you get the put him this way,
okay.
Cover up or whatever. But right. He had us, so we knew how to defend ourselves, mm-hmm. and he was always all his name was Mr. Magnet, and I remember. His name was Ed Magnet, and he had come from Boston, and he'd he'd married into the Kennedy, not the Kennedy family from the but there was several girls in the family, and so Mr. Magnet married one.
He married a Kennedy, but not the famous Kennedy.
Not the John F.
Right.
Joe,
okay.
not the guy that ran the.
Right.
The dad made a lot of money. John F. Kennedy's dad made a lot of money in the Prohibition.
Yeah.
Selling. That's how he became a wealthy man. But anyway, and Leto's, and of course I got to know the Leto's, and I worked for them. Mm-hmm. Their mom was Kennedy, and there was a bunch around Colin. So, but he was a very nice man, a very, very good trainer, even a prize fighter down there. And he was very slim, but quick as a cat. And if you got a little smart with him, he'd
give you a job.
Get over it. Well, you know, there were some very good boxers. There was a very good, of course, Doug Harper, who was the black man.
Yeah.
He used to come and spar with us a little bit. He was a very nice fellow. I knew Doug.
From Amber Valley,
I knew Doug, and I taught his son, Wade, at the time. Yeah. And he's married to a Senate girl. But
Karen.
I taught him in grade 7 and 8. But Doug was a very good boxer. He was a national champion. He won around here, and he was very good. And I guess he won in Edmonton, and so they got a fight for him in Toronto. And he had against, and if he won that, he'd be a national champion. So I guess he hitchhiked to Edmonton, and he got his trainer was there, and I think it was an Edwards. And they took the train to Toronto, and he won his match. They brought the train back, and hitchhiked back from Edmonton.
He's a national champion, and he had to hitchhike back. Yeah. Wow.
But there was another fellow, family, and they were into boxing. And he was a very good boxer.
Sorry, who was that?
And I forget his name. Oh. I can't remember the family name, but it'll come to me. But I good academic and athletic program and drama program in Rochester. And the kids used to come to Athabasca, and they had a fellow here, Bruce McDonald, who was a very good drama teacher. But every year he would take his students to regionals and then to the provincials. And a lot of those students were from Rochester. Hey, and he used to say, I wonder, what are you going to send me this year? He said, what is it? Is there something in the water down there? Because those kids come up here and they know what they're doing, and they just love it, and they got so much confidence, and they you can put them in anything. You don't have to worry about behavior problems because as drama, you got this group over here in part of the school, and another part they're working on another scene or something over here and over here, and you put them in a room, and they got to learn their lines. And anyway,
so Rochester produced good athletes and good actors.
Yes, they did. Yeah.
and well-educated students.
That's right, well-educated students. So you might say they're quite the characters. Anyway, but you know, I'll just start off with what we did, and the students would I used to hold camps, and I found out early that. And at some schools they do it. They got a good athlete or whatever, so they'll send him to a camp somewhere.
Oh, like a hockey camp or a football camp.
That really doesn't help your program. That one person, and they might come out. But what I did is I brought the camp to Rochester, whether it be soccer camp, volleyball camp, badminton camp, hockey camp, whatever.
Right,
and then all of the students could take part, and the ones that hadn't had much competition or played sports, they'd say, "Oh, I can do that. I can do that. I can do that. I'm not as good as that guy, but I can do that."
Right,
and so everybody got better, and the team got better, and we didn't spend a lot of money sending people away. And we didn't have we had the smallest gym. The gym ceiling was too low anyway, and we didn't have a good gym. But we hosted cross country running, and then that was the first thing in the fall. And then we hosted the soccer because I'd made a good field out at Willow Ridge, right by our gate. When we first moved there, I cleaned the brush had grown up on the field, and so I. Fellow came and he'd be doing some work with me, and my uncle came and helped me. We brushed that and we pushed everything back, and we worked it. And I worked with my tractor, and his worked it, and we picked the rocks and we moved the dirt around a little bit. And it was the best field in Athabasca County, best soccer field. And
how far away from Rochester is
about 15. Kilometers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so the girls would play there, and the boys would play. Now, it took, I didn't start using it till about 80, the early 80s. So the first 5 or 6 years. And we didn't always host the soccer, but we took our turn. But because we had a good group, we had a phys ed council, and a very good group that they wanted to spread things around. And we had a league. For everybody was supposed to, you know, for volleyball, you went to Smith, and Smith came to your place. So it was a good end. And the same with basketball and badminton. And so, but with the soccer, and the other thing too was with cross country running. There's, I mean, there's nothing magical, and I worked a long time on prep speech for. Cross country running, you know, they start and they run and then get back. And the best speech I could come up with was, and get up and be real serious and then say, hurry back. No, I did that. I said that a couple of times. but I love Cubs. And I remember when you remember Bud Audison, that name. You know who the name. He's been a trainer of athletic. He was a physical teacher for years in Athabasca. But he trains people to get in better shape. And so the Athabasca hosted the high school provincial cross-country championships one year. So he had me come and give a talk. And, and I was the official starter and presented the awards and so on at the end. So I feel kind of privileged about that. But our students in Rochester, they always wanted to do well. They were doing well. And so they got so that they would run, they would stay in shape through the summer. So when September 1st came, and the other fellow, Brian Keith, and I used to say, you know, you can't play soccer unless you run cross country. So you got to be on the cross country team. We didn't make that stick, but the kids told me. So they would come back. They would run in the summer at home and be. They would shoot basketballs at every one of them and so. Hey, you're a lucky guy. You get a hug. Wow, that's pretty special. Anyway, but we used to host probably 50% of the time we'd host. Boyle would host once in a while. Athabasca had some nice trails, but they weren't any better than ours because the terrain is quite different down around Rochester there. So we hosted probably 15 cross-country championships. We had the trails marked and everything, and we probably won at least a dozen of those. And with soccer, we hosted probably 20 times, and the other time we Athabasca once or twice, and Boyle. And now I would coach the girls, and my other my cohort would coach one. He would coach one team, I'd coach the other. And I won 23 county championships.
Wow.
In 24 years. And volleyball, this other fellow was a very good volleyball coach. Brian Keith, his name was. And he could teach skills about as good as anybody I ever saw. But I had, when I first came to Athabasca, I coached high school boys for 2 years. And then I coached junior high, girls or boys. And I probably won, seven county championships. And in basketball, he coached one, I coached the other one. I probably won a few more than he did, but I always took what nobody else wanted in the academic. If somebody didn't want to teach an option, I taught it. Didn't want to teach social, because we had a very good math science teacher, and so he did most of that. So I sometimes took... I just take whatever nobody else can. And you know Cheryl Belade, I guess, do you?
Yeah.
Yeah, Cheryl was, she was there, she was probably taught in Rochester for about 8 or 9 years, and she always helped out. So I probably won 13 basketball championships. Mm-hmm. Cross-country skiing, we hosted that some, and... So we did a lot of hosting, but Athabasca would host the cross country because they had the what they call them, Muskeg
Creek,
the trails,
right?
We hosted a couple of wrestling meets, badminton. I think I won. We won because I coached all the badminton. I think we won 18 county championships. Because I love badminton, and I become reasonably good at Nate. And if there's something you wanted to, we had a big gym there, and we had some fellows that just loved to compete. And it's a great great sport for conditioning too.
Right.
So I coached that 18 county championships in badminton. Track and field, we always used to. Boyle hosted that most of the time. Mm-hmm. Athabasca sometime, but Boyle did a real good job. But we coached, we hosted elementary track meet. The junior high, all the junior highs in the area competed at Boyle or Athabasca or wherever.
Okay.
But with elementary. Athabasca had their own meet just by themselves. And so Boyle and Smith and Rochester, we had our meet. And Boyle usually hosted that. There was a need for gymnastics, and the students were always in shape. And so in about 6 months, I had the students do all the strength work, the tumbling, the fitness kinds of things. And then I got Bonnie and Carol Siemens to come and do the music to it, put it to music. And,
okay.
And they had, there was four, it was Westlock, Barhead, Athabasca, and Rochester. And we were able to win that each year.
Wow.
Because our students were in shape all the time. So track and field, we'd go and we'd do very, very well, but there was no the formal trophy for the winner. We just and then I coached some hockey. I coached hockey for 11 years, and I was president of the league 1 year, and they're called the High Point Hockey League, and we had about nine teams in there. It was Rochester, Newbrook, Thorhild, Boyle, and the native settlement from out of Boyle to the...
Oh, Métis, the Buffalo.
Yeah. And Lac La Biche was in there.
Buffalo Lake
and
Métis.
And Athabasca had two teams. So
okay.
It was a very good league, and played lots of games. Of course, we were the only one that had an outside arena or a outside rink, and sometimes people were... They didn't want to come to Rochester, but I thought it was pretty special to be one of the last places in the world to hold hockey games. But if you had a snow the night before and you come there in the morning at about 9 o'clock and the game was at 11 or something, and you'd have to clean all that snow off, and you get that much snow on a 6 or 8 inches on a ice surface, that was a lot of snow. So I remember one time we had it was Athabasca came down and they were there a little bit early, and there'd been quite a bit of snow, and they were so upset that, well, they said the place wasn't warm. We had built a building there, and what were we going to do about that snow? That wasn't done in such and such a time, a quarter to 11, they were going home and all this. And I said, no, we'll be fine, fine. And we had good people, and they got out there, and we cleaned the ice, and we had a barrel, and so we could flood the ice. We didn't have a...
Fancy Zamboni.
Zamboni, no.
Yeah.
And so... They were pretty, some of the parents were yakking and complaining, and then I think we beat them 9-1. And so they didn't say this, they just went away with their tail between their legs. And my cousin was playing for Athabasca, or her kids, and they were one of the worst belly achers.
No, really?
Thought it wasn't going to be ready. But you know, those were things, that's the way it was back then.
Yeah. Like
a few years before that, they never even had a rink, eh? But we had a rink, and our kids learned to skate. They were like this fellow that I say, he had his 50th birthday the other day. Man, he was a good hockey player. And my son was a goalie, and he was a good goalie. But we never had much, other than that, we had people fill in. They could skate and stuff. But Sean, I'd just say, shoot the puck out, get it out, and Sean would pick it up and down.
Wow.
And his son now is, and he went and played AAA Midge in Edmonton, but... his son now won a full scholarship to Michigan, Ferris State. Yeah, and he was probably the second, and the only other guy to ever play there he's the only kid from Canada there. And so he's doing well. And yeah, I met his daughter, and she just graduated from, with distinction from U of A in the business world.
Oh, okay.
And so, but anyway, I said a few nice things about him. And his wife said, Larry, thank you for that. She said, you made Sean cry. And Aww. She said, I've got it on tape. But anyway, but the only other guy to ever play there was Mark Bummersback, who was a Rochester boy. And maybe I was telling you about him. He left when he was in, because his dad got a job down around Cochrane looking after a ranch. And they had two boys and a girl, but the boys became hockey. They played up here all the time. for Rochester and Tottenham. But anyway, he became the all-time in the Alberta Junior Hockey League. Not the WHL, but the Alberta Junior. And that's good hockey. Mm-hmm. Lots of guys.
Yeah.
And he became the all-time point getter. And he played 5 years, I guess. All-point getter and all-time goal scorer, all-time assist leader, and in Alberta. And they got a scholarship to Michigan, played there a while, and then he went over and he played in Europe. He played in Russia and Finland, I think. And then he was going to the NHL, and he broke his ankle. Mm. And that was it. He knew that was it. So.
Aww.
But those two guys were the best hockey players that ever played in this whole area. Athabasca had a young fellow here a few years ago, and he was a big boy, about 6'4", and he was drafted, but I don't think anything ever happened. Hockey, it's the strangest game where people can be so... out of touch with what's really going on. They, mm-hmm. they think their child is going to look out Connor McDavid or mm-hmm. Gretzky or anybody, get out of the road because my son is got skates on and he's going to make a right to the top. I never saw, I coached a lot of sports, but mm-hmm. I would see parents that just, they couldn't see that mm-hmm. their son or their
It's a some. Very elite game.
Oh, it
like,
is.
Like, very.
Is, yeah, yeah.
You and know, for as many teams as there are, you really are the best of the best. Even the worst player on the best NHL team is still miles ahead
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, our son was a pretty good hockey player, and he played in Rochester, and then he came to Athabasca. But Athabasca... they just didn't seem to know how to win, and Reg was a good hockey player. He was very good, and he was fast, and he was a good player, handled the puck. He would get the puck down the ice, and some parent would holler puck hog. Well, how are you going to turn? What's the sense? You turn around and pass it back out of your get across the blue line. You're not going to pass it back.
Mm-hmm.
And so, no, he was very a very good team player, but. So the next year, he went to Westlock, and they had a very good coach there.
Mm.
And, of course, the next year, he went and played AAA midget in St. Albert. And they had a very good team, and he actually was the leading scorer, except the coach was kind of a dipstick. And Reggie said, this was the end of January, and Reggie was in the trick program. And he said to the coach, he said, Coach, I'm in high school, and I've got courses. I got two courses coming up, two exams, departmental exams coming up. And the coach said, "Well, that's the way you feel." Monique and Reggie did, and he wrote his courses, and he got university average. Anyway, but the coach, when he came back, the coach benched him because
he missed.
But it didn't matter. But they only allowed one import on the team. And that was the St. Albert Raiders, and then. And of course, and Reggie had won on the score, you know, that isn't a big deal, but he was the only import. And the next year, you know who the import was? Jerome Ginlaw.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
But anyway, he played junior with the Saints, and then that wasn't the end, because he was drafted by the WHL, and he could have gone, but he said, "I don't want to do that. I want to get an education. I want to go into either medicine or physiotherapy," and so he went and played college hockey, and that was very good. And college hockey is very, very, very good. And so he had a good career, and he got into physiotherapy, and he has got his own practice. He owns the clinic in Old, and so you can't beat that. That's a lot better than going and riding the bench in hockey and playing in Russia or Finland or somewhere. No, those guys are so good, the hockey players, and that's their life, eh? And you can be a star in the WHL here, and the next year, you know, even if you're drafted number one or two or three or whatever,
mm-hmm.
there's no guarantee at all that you're going to make it. Because they've got these, the fellows in Russia, and it's got a serious, because if they don't make it in hockey, they're working in the salt mines in Siberia. Mm-hmm. And so some of those fellows come over here as rookies, and they're 25, 26 years old, and you, as a rookie, you got to, as a 19, 20-year-old, you got to compete against them, and they are good.
Mm-hmm.
They are good athletes, and they are in shape, and that's their life, right there. And so, I don't know, 2% of all those guys that are playing in the WHL right now are going to make it in the NHL, eh?
Yeah.
Boy, that was something the other night, that hockey game. Do you watch it?
Yeah.
the Oilers didn't look like they belonged.
No.
Holy doodle. Yeah, and Calgary does have a good team, but you never know. The Oilers could turn it on again like they did against... But they... you know, the score could have been about 9-2. But anyway... But hockey is I coach hockey, and it's a very frustrating sport because people are so adamant that their child, you know, they go to all the games and go to all the practices and their eyes are filled with stars and money, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Hockey is a great game, mm-hmm. but I never seen people so blind about their children's athletic ability or hockey ability. So anyway, what else was I going to say about that? I think I said that I coached the canoe team at Nate.
Yep.
And I did that, and I made about a dozen canoes out of fiberglass.
I got a
mold.
That.
I got a mold and. I kind of liked it, and but anyway, I got too busy. I was coaching hockey at the U of A and wrestling at Nate,
mm-hmm.
and coaching canoeing was that was a little bit too much. So,
mm-hmm.
I can't complain about. But the other thing was I took my students from Rochester. This was in 1990, I believe. I talked to our member of parliament, Jack Shields, who was a friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, he was in the same fraternity I was in, and when he student taught at Strathcona Junior High, that was where he student taught, Bonnie was in his class.
Oh.
So we had a little connection there. But anyway, he said, yeah, so I worked with him, and we took our grade 8s and 9s from Rochester, and I think we had about 20. We raised money, and we flew to Ottawa and spent at least a week around the Parliament buildings, and we went through it. We went into question period.
Shook hands with all
the ministers and the Prime Minister, and but question period was really something to watch those guys behave like spoiled brats. Eh? God, that was really something. And there is a story about that too. And of course, I met Brian Mulroney, the Prime Minister of the day, a couple of times. I'm going ahead a little bit here, but we met him, and then we went to. And I never did mention to them, because I thought it would be bragging. I was talking about my great aunt, who was Agnes from Spale, who was her. She's there's not very many busts of politicians there, but she's one of them.
Right.
She did more for women than any female in Canadian history. But anyway, and then we took the train then to Montreal, and we had a real good. It was very very good. It was a good trip. And then we flew home. But anyway, a few years later, about 7 or 8 years later, our son, who had played football for the Bears, and then he had a tryout with the Montreal Alouettes, and he got hurt, and so he decided he was going to do it. So he went and taught in Thailand.
Mm.
And this would have been about, I don't know, 94 or something like that. No, it may be 95. Anyway, in the summer he took his younger brother, because he was teaching year round, and they had a summer program. It was a private school. It was called Dulwich College on Phuket Island.
Okay.
And so he got his got a job for his younger brother there, and so he went from 1st of May to the middle of August, I guess. And then the next year he got his sister, and the next year he got his two sisters, two younger sisters and younger brother taught there. But the one year we went, and Tiffany, Riley was teaching there, and Tiffany was teaching there, and we went over, and Bonnie and I went for the month of July. We spent and of course Riley took us out, but we looked after a couple of teachers, patroners and his wife. They had a cat and a house on Phuket Island, and we stayed in their place and looked after their cat.
Okay.
But anyway, Riley was very popular with the kids there, and because he took them downtown one day, and these kids, they started laughing, because Riley was 6'5". And these kids laughed that Riley was, their teacher was bigger than an elephant. This was, but anyway, to speed this story up a little bit, so this was the first part of August, and Tiffany decided she might as well come home with us, and so she taught May, June, July, and that was good, and she was coming back, after she did come back, and spent some time with us at home, and then the next year she went and taught in Egypt.
No.
And the next year in Abu Dhabi.
Oh.
So she got the bug about traveling and teaching international school. But anyway, to finish the story, when we were coming home from Thailand, we stopped at Tokyo and somewhere else, but we stopped at LAX, Los Angeles International Airport.
Right.
And it was kind of a quiet, it wasn't very busy there, and pretty soon Bonnie was reading, shopping or something in Tiffany, and I was walking around just seeing what was there in the international airport, and here comes this fellow with a bag down on his coat and his arm, and I said, walked up, and I said, that was nice to see a friendly Canadian face, and he looked at me and said, I know you from somewhere. It's Brian Mulrooney.
Wow.
Isn't that something? He said, I know you from somewhere. I said, yeah, I took my students to Parliament when Jack Shields was our MP. He said, I remember that. Oh, I remember that. He had a nice group of students, he said.
Wow.
So I asked him, thinking that he should have guards or whatever you call
it. Oh, security, right.
Security with him. And he said, oh, no, I try to avoid that. I said, so you just travel the world? He said, no, I was on a member of General Schwarzkopf. He said, I had a meeting with General Schwarzkopf over there. So he and I had a nice little conversation. But you know, when you get out in the world and you get around a little bit, you meet people, and it's amazing the people you can meet and make contacts with. And I was never a friend of, we weren't buddy-buddy, but he remembered me, I remembered him, and then he went to, he was shopping in the store, and he said, and your daughter was with you, and so he remembered Tiffany.
Oh, wow.
So he said, here, dear, he said, hold my coat, I'm going to buy something here. So he gave his coat and his whatever he had, so he could go and pay the...
Oh, wow.
Tiffany helped, but it's amazing. There's not very many places in the world where you can go and visit the highest office in the land, like the Parliament, or shake hands with the Prime Minister and meet all the ministers. And they bought us, Jack Shields bought us lunch down with all the politicians, have dinner or supper in the evening and so on. That was a free meal for us. And
wow.
So, we got treated like royalty. And then to meet the Prime Minister, and there's not many, well, with what's going on in the world. I don't think there's not many other places in the world where you'd be able to do that. So
no.
And then the 2 years later, we were going to do it every 2 years because you would catch all the students. And our other girl was 1 year younger than Tiffany, Brandy. And so I wanted to do the same thing, to take them to Ottawa, to visit Ottawa and learn, become better Canadians and mm-hmm. understand why we're such lucky people and mm-hmm. What Canada is really all about and so on. But they didn't want the parents and the kids going. So we ended up, they had a vote, and they wanted to go to the West Coast. So we mm-hmm. went to Vancouver and Victoria, and that was a very nice trip.
Mm-hmm.
We took via rail.
Mm.
Got via rail, and that's really something to travel across through the mountains on that.
Yeah.
You're moving pretty good. And we got on a big boat out there, and we stayed in the UBC residence while we were there.
Oh, okay.
Visited all around, and then we went to Victoria, and went to the Bouchard Gardens, and we got on a boat and traveled around the whole island. And
mm-hmm. did you get to see any whales? Or
we did, yeah, we saw some whales, yeah. Mm-hmm. And of course you saw what are the
sea lions
crawl up on the rocks, sea lions yeah sea lions mm-hmm. and ocelots. And I said mm-hmm. I told the kids, the boys, I said these ocelots are they're pretty good friends with and you some of your fellows know them pretty well. And they said, why? And I, because guys said, you sit on your ocelot. I did, Dylan. Anyway, I better not.
You're good with the pun.
Anyway, but it was a wonderful trip too. And and we came home via rail as well. Yeah, we
mm-hmm.
caught the train in Edmonton. So that was a good trip. And then the next year, I'd done my thing, and so Brian Keith, he took them to, they took them to the Maritimes.
Mm.
He took the students, and that was a good trip.
Yeah.
And after that, I don't know, I think they went again, but the thing is about that, we raised the money, and every child had the opportunity to go.
Mm-hmm.
There was one, maybe one or so didn't go.
Mm-hmm.
With those trips that I took them on. But we helped, everybody helped everybody else raise money. We mm-hmm. had, I don't know, they could sell chocolates, or they could sell, that competition where you sell newspapers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or
magazine sales. Yeah. And we had community functions and raised money, and meals, that we had a dinner theater and that kind of thing. So, yeah. So one other thing we did in Rochester that was absolutely the nicest, well, other than writing the history, using school to write the history book, was we had a bunch of, and I thought it was be good that since our students go to Athabasca and perform on the stage, that we do a musical in our school. And I got a hold of Ida Edwards.
Okay.
Because I had got her before to help me with the Remembrance Day thing.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first started, there was no Remembrance Day, and we got it. We had people come in, and we had our students, every class would do something, and it became a very beautiful event, mm-hmm. wonderful event. And 1 year we got the color guard come down from Athabasca. But I'd have some of the fellows in the area that had been in the war, and I asked some of them to come and just talk to the students. And of course we had about 100 and some students, and they all sat in the middle of them. And it was Kenny Jackson, and he said, "Yeah, Larry, I got some stories," he said. So he told the story about how they he said they marched all through Holland and Italy and all.
Mm-hmm.
But he said, "I'm not going to tell you any stories about them." But he said, "I'll tell you one funny little story." He said, "We've been on the march for a long time, for 2 weeks, and we finally got word that we said tomorrow morning there's going to be We're going to have bacon and eggs for breakfast because we got a shipment in, and guys, be ready. And so the cooks were all ready in the morning, the mess hall or mm-hmm. tent, whatever they had. Mm-hmm. And they start cooking an egg and start cooking. They throw in the fry pan. It didn't look too good. The eggs looked a little more. It didn't look very good. The eggs didn't look good. The bacon didn't look good. And so he went back. He said they went back and looked at the crates mm-hmm. and the dates on them and the
right.
and where they'd been, and they'd been over a year trying to catch up with these eggs. There were chicks inside and everything else. They were rotten. So he said that was we laughed about that for a long.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Laughed about that for a long time. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. The devil. I started on that one. Mm-hmm. Then I was going to tell. Oh, about the musical theater. I got. But Ida would come down and she would get. And you know, we had the junior high sing "Oh Danny Boy," mm-hmm. and you know, and there wasn't a dry eye in the house hardly. But it was wonderful. And we had a piper down there. Well, Brian Keith. His uncle was a piper, and he would come every year and come in and they'd march around, and he'd bring a couple of friends with him. They had three pipers and so on. Mm-hmm. But anyway, getting back to the play that we put on. It was called Westward Ho, and it was a very good, very good play. But we had a talented bunch of students there, and we got ready. And my part was I got Ida directing, and then Brian Keith and some of the other ones helped and kicked in, and it takes a lot of work to put on a dinner theater, and so anyway, but that's not one of my talents, I said, mm-hmm. but I'll look after the props, and so I got an old wheel cart that had one wheel broken and the shaft sticking up there, mm-hmm. and I got some horse collars and a horse hanging over here, and I had a fellow had mounted a partridge for me, and I had it, and I put it up on the wall, and just about everything you could think of. So our props were very real, and we had kids singing, and I think we did four. We did one for the school. And then we did two more for the community, mm-hmm. and we had a full house every time. And some of the people said, "Larry, you've got to get this on the road. You take this is good stuff." And somebody from central office was there too, and they said, and it was good. It was really good. And then I said, and partway through all of this, I said, we always had good. Rapport or communication or competition and stuff with Jarvie School,
mm.
and Len Cedar was the fellow there, and he was a band teacher. And I said, "Len, do you want to get together with us?" Because we had lots of volleyball, basketball, badminton, mm. Soccer, and stuff. And he said, "We've got a musical theater. Do you guys want to come over? You bring your band,
mm-hmm.
and we'll." We'll perform our play, and then we'll have a big lunch for you. We'll have I guess we had the parents come, and they cooked turkey, and they wow. had the whole thing.
Oh wow!
And so they came, and we had, and then their band played for us for the whole school, and that was really something. So that was we never did any more after that. You know, I tried to get the students to do it again the next year, and they said, "No, we've done there and done that, and I don't think we could ever do as well." And so they didn't want to perform again.
Wow.
But when they went to Athabasca, they did the mm-hmm. because we knew and something different, and
mm-hmm.
and there was results at the end. They, mm-hmm. they would go to competitions and go to Edmonton right. or wherever they go, Red Deer.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so that's about... that's most of that. I think I've got probably enough, eh? Sorry. But you know, and but I must say that about the farm, mm-hmm. you know, the farm was a wonderful thing for and if I didn't have Bonnie, I could have never. And there's not very many women that mm-hmm. would have followed this this hillbilly gone wild, eh? Out to the farm.
And, with no running water, no indoor toilet.
And as we could afford it, right. We renovated this old house. And when you come out, mm-hmm. we've got it's a nice home. I mean, it's homey.
Mm-hmm.
It's, there's million-dollar homes or fancy stuff. But ours is just there's something about a home being a home.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an old guy sings a song about, ever hear Walter Brennan?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that was the music. It takes a heap of living to make a house a home.
Yeah.
A whole lot of something and a whole lot of praying and a whole lot of...
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, but, all those things. And it took a long time, but we did it all ourselves. And my dad was a carpenter, and you always learn a few things here and there. And before I left Nate, I took a course, and I took a bricklaying course. So I did the brickwork.
Oh, okay.
In the arch between the front room and the kitchen and the chimney outside and the wall of the fireplace is on the wall. I did all that and the box and so we did that too.
Mm-hmm.
And I did everything. I didn't build the cupboards, and the plumbing, I got somebody to do that, mm-hmm. but just about all the wiring I did myself, and the building and the inside and the outside and the up, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a very nice home. But Bonnie was very, very patient with some of the things that got done and some of the things that didn't get done. And one time we laughed about that. I went to my, I had a cousin, my dad's cousin, he was teaching at Nate with me, and he said, "Come on, Larry, you're gonna bring your family and meet Jenny and the boys and the girls." So we went out there, and Jenny, his wife, his name is Max MacArthur. Now he'd have been a cousin to Agnes MacPhail, I guess.
Oh.
So anyway, he taught at Nate for years. Anyway, but he said, "Come on out. We'll have a supper or dinner." And I guess his wife, Jenny, was trying to get him to finish something before the company came. And of course, the laminated fur and stuff. And the ceiling was probably about, in the middle midpoint, there was a apex, or whatever you call it, was about probably 18 feet up.
Oh, wow.
And so, and they were talking. And he was saying, "Geez, Larry, I got around. I was finishing up something," and he said it. He said it only took me 25 years or something, 15 years to finish this. And his wife said, Jenny said, "Max, it was 15 years and 15 minutes." He finally got up and finished something there. So Bonnie had to be the same way to put up with the bill. But we did the. My grandfather had just put rafters upstairs, and there was no floor.
Mm.
Just there was a few boards where you could walk around, but just shavings up there. So I had to get all that stuff out of there and make it. And I did the wiring. We added a piece on the back and
put actual insulation in.
Yeah. We did all that. But when we were doing the upstairs, and of course we had five children. And we didn't have enough bedroom space, so I made one, two, three little bedrooms and a half bath.
Mm.
But I did it out of tongue and groove spruce. I guess it was spruce. Mm. The downstairs was cedar, but there's so many angles. You go on an angle this way, and because it was rafters, you get about 8 feet from the edge, you've got to put a wall, eh?
Right.
Just a pony wall, eh?
Mm-hmm.
And so, but I would, And I don't know how I ever had the energy to do it, but you taught and you coached and you marked and you prepared and you came home and did the chores, and then the wintertime, mm-hmm. after have supper, 7:30, get yeah. ready for bed, and I'd go upstairs and start working. Mm-hmm. And, every night. And mm-hmm. so I'd bring those, and it took quite a, to get those 16-foot pieces of 1x6 tongue and groove pine up the stairs, and then I'd cut starting to, and you have to bring it up, and I'll show you when you mm-hmm. come anyway.
Okay.
Anyway, but so I would saw that, and I didn't have the money to buy a chop saw, you mm-hmm. know, one of those quick saw you cut.
Right.
And you can't do it with an ordinary saw. And I had some, my dad had some tools left, and I, but saw that if the teeth aren't fine enough, you'll tear it every time.
Right.
So you know what I did? I cut every cut was with a hacksaw.
Wow.
And then Bonnie would sand it, and I'd nail it in place and glue it and stuff. Mm-hmm. So that took a long, long time. But our kids had a nice place to do the homework and sleep right. and be away from, that was their den, I guess, out up there.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we built a log cabin together with them. And, mm-hmm. and I haven't quite finished that either. So I guess when I get working on this Willard School, I'll finish that that log cabin too. But it is a lovely building. Mm-hmm. You know, I took the boys and we saw it, fell the trees. And we left the branches on. It was springtime, and you don't want to get the log muddy, because then it's hard to saw. You'll dull the blade and so on. So I would skid it out with a little tractor and on a trail and skid it out to, on a landing, and then leave it for a little while. And then we'd limb the trees, mm-hmm. and then the boys would help, and then buck them up into 16-footers or 12-footers.
Oh, okay.
And then we had a fellow come with a portable sawmill, mm-hmm. and we took two sides off those logs, and we sawed some lumber, but took two sides off. So it was 8 inches and with the top, and so I put right. one on the other and butt-end them together. And mm-hmm. and that was 16-foot, and some of them were 18 feet. And so
wow.
So, but anyway, it's a nice cabin. And we so a few years ago, then my nephew came, and we sanded all those, took all the any like the kid's job was to peel them,
mm.
and of course with those draw knives you can't get all, so there's a little bit of bark left on here, the
right. not
the limbs where the limbs were, it's a little rough.
There's some character.
Give it some character, but mm-hmm. we sanded all everything. We went in there and sanded that, and then we varnished, and then we put the they used to call it chinking.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a nice, very nice word nowadays, but, mm-hmm. and it looks very, very nice.
Oh, good. mm-hmm.
But anyway, it's quite a yeah. And I built my own shop. I remember that I took out the lumber, and I remember you don't have a transit, you don't have the stuff to, so you know I leveled it, so the cement was we mixed the cement by hand and filled the holes, and then I put a cement and a grater blade in there and something to attach the post to when you're going up to put the walls something solid to put the walls to, and anyway I used a water hose on one end,
mm-hmm.
and so you got it almost perfectly level. You know, you pour water in the hose, and so you here put water in it, and so you move it so that you can move it. So, and then you have a stake there, and you put it. And you can mark how high it should be,
right?
How high over there, and how high over in that corner. That corner, move it around, and yeah, it was a lot of work, but it's mm-hmm. it was 64 by 46.
Okay.
And
that's a good size.
I designed my own trusses, and that took a lot of work to build. I think we needed 37 of them or something.
Uh-huh.
But I had the kids home in the summertime, and mm-hmm. our kids, they the boys, when they were in grade 11 and 12, they wanted to play football. They were big boys, and they played hockey, and they played all the sports. And so they went in and stayed with Bonnie's mum and dad, and that was very good of Bonnie's mum and dad. And they went to a good high school, McNally High School in Edmonton, and they played football. And Troy came back for the second semester, but finished up 11 and 12 in Athabasca. But Riley stayed 11 and 12. But when he did that, the Edmonton Public School Board or McNally High School, they wanted the tax dollars that went to the county. So we had to pay. He had to pay Riley's tuition at high school.
Right.
Because
he wasn't in that school district, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they weren't getting any money from from the tax dollars, but
right.
The county collects the school board money, and then they give it to them.
Right.
And then, but that didn't go to. So the Edmonton Public or McNally, they wanted to send. We did. We had to pay. So anyway. So our two boys did that, and then our youngest son, when he played AAA midget, he had to stay in there and in St. Albert, and then for 2 years he stayed in. So what do you do? We were always very and other people did it too, like Athabasca kids did if they were a good volleyball player. Like, did you see the paper where Max Elgert?
I wrote that one.
Did
yeah.
you?
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. Mm-hmm. And you know, I have a connection there too, because when I taught in Athabasca in 66, 67, 67, 68, in my second year, the first year I stayed at, because I couldn't travel back, but so I stayed at Fred Reinhold, and Fred Reinhold went on to be a principal and a superintendent of schools in Beaver County for years, Grand Prairie and then in Beaver County. But in my second year, I stayed at Mr. and Mrs. Elgert's. And of course, Mrs. Elgert was just a gem. She was just a lovely, lovely lady. But I got to know the Elgert's very well. And
so this would be Max's grandparents Greg's
Max's,
parents.
Max's dad is Greg.
Yeah.
And Greg's mom and dad are Helen and Dave Elgert. Dave taught chemistry at the high school for years and years. But I got to know them really, all the kids, I got to know them real well, of course. And I followed Jamie. Jamie Elgert married a Gerlach girl. And their daughter was a nice girl. She played basketball for Rochester here a few years ago, and she was lots of kids. And she was very, very good, went on, played high school, was a star in high school. And then she got a scholarship to Grand Prairie College. And then, she was an all-star in the league for years. And then she went to, but she was always trying to get in. When she got her first degree, she wanted to get into veterinary medicine, and she couldn't get in. And then she tried again, and so I went to Jamie, her dad, and her mom, Maureen, and I said, you know, if you want some help with I have some connections because I know some, and so he said, well. And so I contacted the a lady who was, Kevin Haynes,
former county councilor.
His aunt was Debbie Haynes, who was a good friend of my sister's. They roomed together in Edmonton. And she went through veterinary medicine, and she became a prof at Saskatoon. And so I made a contact. I talked to her. I gave her the information about this girl who loved, there's nothing she couldn't do on the farm. She knew cattle, all she ever wanted to be was a vet. She could drive equipment, she's the kind of a girl that'll come home and not stay, and she'll be a rural vet, with large animal rural vet. And so I mentioned that to the And of course, Debbie Haynes then was, she's retired. But Debbie Haynes was the one that discovered the first milking is what?
The colostrum.
Colostrum, absolutely. She discovered the colostrum of formula, and that's what everybody uses now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and so anyway, and I talked to Roy Lewis, who was the he was one of the guys at Westlaw Clinic, and I talked to somebody else, and they were so surprised. Pretty soon, she got accepted at both places, Calgary.
Oh, wow.
And they were so happy that her grandmother, Helen, and Helen was from, Helen Elker, she was actually from Grassland, because Dave had taught there when he was, anyway, so
oh, they so, were the so girl. So Dave's mom?
Yeah.
So, okay.
Yeah, Dave's wife.
Oh, Dave's wife. Okay, yeah. So Greg Elgert's parents. Okay.
Yeah, but so anyway, the Gerlach, her Maureen's mom and dad were, they were just so tickled pink, and of course Helen was too.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had Jackie, the girl, who got into vet school, and now she's graduated.
Mm-hmm.
And she's working at Westlaw. And a very, very good, she's got a good reputation.
Because
she was a hard worker. And so they had her phone me, and I said, well, you know, Jackie, what goes around, your mom and your grandma, your great-grandma and grandpa, they were awfully good to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I did anything that would help you along the way in your education, then that's a good thing. But they helped me, and so mm-hmm. so it all worked out well. But mm-hmm. Greg's now, he's the physiotherapist in town here. Yeah. And his wife is Colleen, and he had played for the Pandas in volleyball, and so she worked with those boys, and they took them into Edmonton. They went in there and they played the club ball and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But Max, he is a real, like, he's about 6'5".
Yeah,
and but very gifted. He was a setter, and he made the All-Star team. And boy, that is good.
Yeah.
You remember how they used to play volleyball, they'd pass the ball and
they
ought to hit. Now, though, it's absolutely, you know, the people that played 20 years ago, they'd have tattooed balls. They'd have a tattoo on their, and that ball hit them in the face.
Yeah.
Those guys are so good.
Oh, yeah.
And they set one another, set one another up and dig balls up and... Mm-hmm. What's that serve called? The jump serve.
Oh,
And they jump, and then they and they hit that ball
at
100 mile an hour.
Yeah.
And they land about 12 feet into the court when they.
Yeah.
Holy dude. So he's very good, and his brother is very good too. Mm-hmm. He's playing for.
He's out in BC.
Yeah.
David Thompson.
That's right. Yeah. And
their sister Abby is soccer. She's into soccer.
Her mom, they took her. I don't know how much soccer she played up here. I don't think she played in Edmonton, but her mom took her down because she was a good athlete, and she found a place for her to play. And, and they would have to pay the full tuition probably, but you know, it wasn't necessarily a scholarship. But a nice girl, and
quite the family, three kids, and all three of them are really, really good in sports.
They sure were, and you know, and that's and it was the same. See, our oldest boy played football for the University of Calgary. They won the Vanny Cup. Riley played 5 years. They didn't have a very good coach, but he played 5 years and had a tryout with Montreal, and Reggie played hockey for all those years. He played in college, and then when he came to U of A, he was going to be too busy. Hockey was too busy, so he played football. He'd never played football in his life. And the coach, Tom Wilkinson said, come on out. Your brother's already, and so Reggie went out, and, you know, he worked like heck and put on, he went from about 195 or 200 up to about 230.
Oh, okay.
And he made the team, and they used to call him Rudy.
Hmm.
Remember the show,
yep,
Rudy?
Yeah.
Because he was just pacing all the time he wanted.
Yeah.
But the coaches, they didn't want to put him in against those veteran players from, mm-hmm. and so he played. He made the, but you know, guys can get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
If you're too anxious, too eager, and they played him at defensive end, and some guard could come around the corner and wipe out his knees or his hands, and that's what he was going to make his living with. So I knew the coaches, and I never said anything, but Jim Donnelly said, he said, God, I'm afraid to put Reg out there, mm-hmm. and get injured. And he, mm-hmm. so. And then Tiffany played college basketball at Augustana.
Mm-hmm.
And she could have played at U of A, but she wasn't really hungry. But Brandy played 1 year at Grant McEwen, mm-hmm. and then she went 4 years at UBC.
Mm-hmm.
And they were a powerhouse in basketball. But they had a coach that all worked them so hard that they were burnt out about halfway through the season, and they had injuries.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why someone would do that, but mm-hmm. she was with the national team, but she coached she was on the national team and just worked the bejeebers out of them. And a lot of them were mentally exhausted and mm-hmm. physically, their bodies couldn't take that.
Mm-hmm.
So, we spent a lot of money driving, coaching kids and driving them around to see them play and.
Mm-hmm.
We used to go when UBC was in Edmonton, we'd drive in and see it. When they were in Calgary or when they were in Saskatoon, we'd drive and see them. And
mm-hmm.
when they were playing out there, we'd go fly out and see her play there and so on. But we watched a lot of sport, I'll tell you. But what better, you know, mm-hmm. what prouder thing could you be doing?
Yeah.
And I do remember, and I always supported the U of A, the football team, and I gave sponsorship to wrestlers and so on,
mm-hmm.
and they would the Golden Bear football team, which wasn't a very good team for the last 20 years, but they would have a fundraiser,
mm-hmm.
and they would have it at the Derrick Golf and Country Club, and it was $150. So this 1 year, I said to the boys, well, we might as well all go.
Mm-hmm.
Like Riley was going to come up from Calgary, I guess, and Reggie was coming up from Olds, and mm-hmm. Troy was at home here, and so we won. And all that, I was a pretty proud dad, because there's not very many guys that ever had three sons playing university football, and we had a nice chat with Riley, Mike Riley, we had the four of us.
Okay.
Dad and the three boys, and had a nice talk with Mike Riley, and I think we have a picture of it somewhere. So it does make you proud, and I am sure that the Elgerts mm-hmm. have been to see Max play a lot. Eh? Mm-hmm. But it looks like he's going to play in Europe. He wants to play in Europe.
Yeah. Yeah, he's hoping he gets picked up by a team.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Volleyball is very big over there.
Yeah.
Very big. Mm-hmm. They have packed houses, like their soccer. And yeah, volleyball is a big sport over there, and it's to watch those people, the way they handle that ball.
Mm-hmm.
They pass the ball and they spike the ball, they serve the ball.
Yeah.
Oh, I had friends that played on the U of A team when I was,
mm-hmm.
and they wouldn't even make anything back under. It's because now they're so much bigger, they're mm-hmm. faster, they're stronger, they're taller. Holy God.
Oh, the game's changed. Oh, it's completely
changed. It's like hockey.
Yeah.
It's like hockey. You mm-hmm. know, even when Gretzky played Messier and those fellas,
mm-hmm.
you watch today, those guys were slow.
Yeah.
Honestly, they were
They changed the game. Well, Grant say they changed the game with that European style of hockey, and now, they couldn't even keep up with what it's changed to.
And the goalies are so much better.
Yeah.
You know, but one time, 90% of the goalies in the NHL were Canadians.
Mm-hmm.
And now, I bet you there's 90% are not Canadians.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they are so... But that's probably the biggest part of the game is because those goalies are coached, they're in shape, they're mm-hmm. bigger, they're stronger, they're faster, mm-hmm. and they're...
More flexible, they're more... Yeah, everything.
I don't know how they... Mm-hmm. You know, you can see gymnasts do that, those
yeah.
splits, but the, mm-hmm. those guys, that is amazing.
Yeah, and those big pads, yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
I went to school with a guy that could do the full splits in those hockey pads, Yeah,
it's a different game.
Yeah.
But anyway, you know, I've talked about a few other things, but I don't think there's much more we can touch on. But you know, I do want to say a few things about the farm and that. You know, we built Bonnie and I. We, if you're going to farm, you've got to have more land for cattle and open up land. And I was always afraid of fires.
Mm.
This is going, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was always afraid of fires when I was a kid. Our our home burned down, and I remember the fire from 1968. I was teaching in Athabasca, and I was on my way. I had a summer job. I was leaving, and I had a summer job at north of Inuik, a place called Canunic Point with Imperial Oil, and I had to be done in Athabasca and get because Imperial Oil. They wanted you to have a medical, make sure you were fit, because they were taking you up there to work for, for 7 weeks we were up there.
Right. Not a lot of hospitals there. No,
not at all. So I had to be, so I do remember that the fire of 68. So, so we cleared a lot of land, about 100 acres to the west, so that if a fire did come across from those northwest winds that... you know, you'd have a fighting chance of, because there's green grass there now.
Yeah.
There's no bush for half a mile over there. Mm-hmm. So we cleared about, opened up about 300 acres, and now that is work.
Yeah.
That, picking rocks and roots and draining and, it was a lot of work. But we did that work, and we loved it, and the kids were involved in the picking of rocks, and, you know, you get the, you can't, force him, but you know we'd say, and Bonnie was the one that she was the one that got the kids to come in. Because she'd say, "Well, okay, we're going to go to Dad, and we're going to with your dad, and we're going to pick four bucket loads, and then we'll have a wiener roast." Well, that's good.
Right.
Or we're going to go and pick six loads, and because there's seven of us, and we're going to we'll go to the lake. We'll go to Forfar. So the kid, you have to bribe them a little bit, and we had to pay them, of course, too. But but they did that, and they didn't mind it at all. But they always used to tell their friends. And I'm speaking of this Sean Eyre gang that I was talking about that I went and spoke at his last Saturday afternoon in Spruce Grove, and I told the story of our three boys. Sean used to come and stay at our place quite a bit. He used to stay overnight, and the next morning they'd have a hockey game, and Bonnie would drive them, and so Sean came from a pretty tough background too, but a nice kid. But I said, the boys must have teased Sean through the night that he was going to get up and pick rocks all day. And so I said, and it's true, he did. He got up and he had breakfast quickly and all of a sudden and put his shoes on and he was gone. Put his running shoes on and he ran 20 kilometers and never stopped. He ran home. So I said some nice things about him. But I said, Sean, there's one thing you... All the great things you've done, congratulating you, but you owe me one day of rock picking. but anyway, so picking roots, picking rocks, cutting hay. You know, the kids even, you know, when they're 10 years old, you have them driving the tractor and raking and stuff. And they all helped in all that. And the girls, not as much, but they helped.
Mm-hmm.
But they were very good. They were busy with everything they had going in their lives too. But so it was clearing the land, picking the rocks, you know, making hay, mm-hmm. cattle, when we had to bring cattle in, they were always there to help. And on the farm, there's as a farmer and a rancher or whatever, there's nothing more enjoyable than bringing in the herd mm-hmm. in the fall. That's big. To see those cattle come in and you from I'd bring them home from across the Muskeg and the, I'd have a bucket mm-hmm. or a little tractor and a bale on the back and they'd be following
oh,
the,
right.
and the cows would be the nostrils of the breath that would be
right.
pooping through and you'd see them for a mile mm-hmm. coming across there. Yeah, there's nothing like that or bringing them in the horse or,
right.
and but the kids were always pretty good but you can't use sometimes you can't use people that the cattle don't know. I brought one mm-hmm. time I brought a few of Reggie's friends home and they were going to chase cattle. Well, when we went out there and those cattle saw different people,
mm.
they spooked and away they went. And it mm. took us about another 2 days to round them up. So,
wow.
So we always did it ourselves. And
mm-hmm.
But the kids, you're always, you know, they're kids like any other kids. And
mm-hmm.
when they're supposed to be watching very closely, they're not.
So, yep.
So Dad's language sometimes changed.
Yep. I've been at the end of that, too.
Anyway, but yeah, we cleared land and we rented land and did a lot of work. And some of the rented land that I took on, I you know taking out the old fences and clearing up mm-hmm. the brush piles that had never been cleaned up, and
mm-hmm.
it was lots of work. And yeah, we had 195 cows is the most we had.
Wow!
And that was a lot of work calving mm-hmm. those in the springtime and.
Mm-hmm.
And giving them their shots
we've given castrating, them, branding, yeah. all the yeah.
Yeah, now they got to have all the shots, and they got a CCA mm-hmm. tag, Canadian identification tag, and and bring them in, and then we would sell them in the fall, and that would pay the bills. And
mm-hmm.
but the farm was very good to us because we got out of debt. Mm-hmm. And we have a nice farm. We mm-hmm. have a very, very nice farm. As a matter of fact, a farm that most cattlemen would be proud to have. That's for sure. Good Angus, Black Angus, and Simmental bulls, some of them. And so we have as good a cattle as there is when it comes to time to sell them. The auctioneers always say, oh, here come the little Spears cattle coming through here now. And anyway, and they always acknowledge and thank you for bringing the good cattle. And, but anyway, yeah, we built a very good farm, and I hope it stays in the family because, yeah. you know, we have six quarters and some, mm-hmm. and then six quarters of lease land as well. So that's quite a bit of land.
Yeah.
But, you know, the best kind of land to have is land that's paid for. It's just like the best kind of tractor to have, one that's paid for.
Yeah.
Never mind John Deere or Case mm-hmm. or whatever.
Same with a horse.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I have a granddaughter that goes to that school in Airdrie.
Oh, okay.
And she has a horse now, and there's a barn quite close, and mm-hmm. she absolutely loves that horse.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it was a running quarter horse.
Okay.
A racing. They down in the States, they race quarter horses. Not mm-hmm. up here anymore, I don't think.
No.
They don't do that. And so she's kind of working on it as a barrel racer.
Mm-hmm.
Or a barrel.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so, I don't know. But I haven't seen it, but I've seen her with the other horse. Like, she wasn't a real brave kind of a girl. She was mm-hmm. the only, they just have the one child.
Right.
And so she was, she never fought with her brothers and sisters and so on. To,
right.
But man, she's very good on that horse.
Flourished.
Very,
yeah.
very good, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I never thought you'd see her riding that horse and jumping over that. You know, they jump about that high, I guess.
Yeah.
But, so anyway, we did it together. And I could have never done it if it wasn't for Bonnie. All the help she has given, you know. I'd come in night at 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, and say, Bonnie, you've got to come and give me a hand. There's a cow calf coming backwards. And,
right.
And she'd get up out of bed and come with me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's not very many women will do that.
Yeah.
That's for sure. But no, we built it together, and we love it, but we both just about, it's time to give it up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this fall we're gonna get rid of some of the cattle. We'll rent out some of the land. And but last year, it was too much. I had 260 acres of crop in. I had to cut most of it for green feed because there wasn't feed.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest, I just, my old swather came. So I had to get somebody to come and swath.
Mm.
My old combine wouldn't, so I had to get somebody to come and combine. So, but anyway, you know, you're changing, you're taking all the grain out of one bin and mm-hmm. booting, and you can move that auger by yourself, used to use it by yourself, and now you need Bonnie and I and somebody else to help us. So,
yeah.
But we did that. We sold grain. We had a very good year, a profitable year.
Mm-hmm.
But
will you have to be dragged off the farm, or will you at some point say, okay, we're going to move to town? And
No, I think Bonnie and I, we love the farm. We have a nice home there. We can be comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe one day, maybe I'll be in a... But, you know, it's mm-hmm. best if the longer you can stay on your own home, the better.
Because mm-hmm.
the government provides those supports for people.
Yeah.
And you know, they've got... Mm-hmm. People can come out to your place and nurses... Mm-hmm.
Because you have one son that lives close, right?
Yeah, one son. You're right. Right, yeah. Just down the road. Yeah, he's so close.
Yeah,
and Tiffany's getting she's a wonderful girl. She's got mm-hmm. a heart of gold. I'll tell you, she's a lot like her mother. And as a teacher, mm-hmm. the kids absolutely love her.
Mm-hmm.
And the parents love her. And gosh, I said, Tiffany, you've got to write a book about all the things that those kids say. She said the other day, one of the kids said, "Oh, everybody says it, but best teacher ever." He said,
"Aww,
Yeah, no, they absolutely love her. And when she was in Thailand, she still has people corresponding from
her. Oh, wow,
20. I think this is her 23rd year of teaching now.
Wow.
So she's got a few more years, and then she would love to come, like mm-hmm. Tiana wants to come and
mm-hmm.
do farm stuff.
I right. guess. Yeah.
So anyway, and her dad is, her dad, or Brent is a cop in Calgary.
Oh,
so
okay.
Then I think they got 25 years, they got full pension.
Right. Yes.
I think
that's yeah. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, and the farm was we've got good neighbors. We have very, very good neighbors over mm-hmm. the years. You know, I've helped them, they've helped me.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's probably 100 quarters around there that I've either baled somebody's hay or worked some mud holes for them, or stooped
right.
grain when I was a kid. Thrashed as a kid, drove a bundle team when I was 13 years old. And I, you know, I was a big, strong farm boy, and
mm-hmm.
that's how you paid the farm bill.
And
I think I told you when we got the power, how I, mm-hmm. my two older brothers and I, we worked on clearing the line and digging the holes and getting the rocks out of the holes and put the power poles in and tamp the power poles. And my uncle had a thing where he could lift the, with his tractor, he could lift it up, and we somehow got
those. Oh, so he had like a clamp sort of thing.
It wasn't really, but I don't know. But there was a, maybe he had another tractor to stop it from. See, you didn't have that. There wasn't even hydraulics back in those days.
Mm.
There was a hydraulic on the back of the auger, but they didn't have the big bucket loaders and stuff. That was before.
No, so he was skilled then.
Yeah,
he was
skilled.
Got those. Okay.
And like today, if something's got to be done, you got it done somehow. You had a way of. I used to help my uncle bring in bales. Or little, he used to make those little round bales, and you'd cut the tines off on a fork, or they would be cut off. And you would throw them up, and you'd have somebody on the load, and two guys, one guy on each side throwing them up. And and thousands and thousands of bales. people wouldn't, if they all of a sudden said you can't feed big bales anymore, there would be a mad dash. There'd be about 95% of the cattle in the country sold. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is a lot of work.
Yeah.
It's but it's been good for us. It's been very, very good.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as the other things on the, you know, Bonnie and I have worked together on just about everything in Rochester. We were with the United Church, and we'd when they had their fair, we'd go down and 6 o'clock or 4:00 to 5:30, we'd be down there starting to cook breakfast and get everything going. And we did that for 20 years.
Wow.
And put a float in the parade,
mm-hmm,
for years and years. And the community's been good to me, mm-hmm, because I taught school there, and I was the counselor there. And last year when they, or 2 years ago when they had the first ever inaugural Robbie Burns night,
mm-hmm,
they asked me to be the guest speaker, and I guess I did okay.
Yeah.
But the other thing
that was quite the night. I was there.
Oh, you were there. You listened to me.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Was that any good?
It was good.
So, anyway, the other thing that I've done for years in Rochester is the youth group. And there's, mm-hmm, a Candace Jensen and her, mm-hmm, husband Clayton.
Mm-hmm.
They, she's an ordained minister.
Oh, I didn't know that.
They were,
okay.
Yeah, they were my students in Rochester.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, every once a year they would have a supper, and they would auction off desserts, dessert auction.
Okay.
And I was the auctioneer, and of course it was lots of fun. I knew everybody, and I'd, mm-hmm, I'd have stories about this and this and that.
Right.
And but I was getting $120-$130 for some of those pies.
Oh, good for you!
Even if they weren't bidding, I would. And everybody had such a good time. Yeah, I would. When you know people in the community and trust you, and they. Mm-hmm. It was a pretty good time. But, mm-hmm, yeah, we made over $3,000.
Wow.
Quite a few of those years. And I don't know how many years I did it, but, well, it hasn't been for the last two anyway, for sure, but it was probably 6 or 7 years, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I
mean. Okay.
So that was a very good thing. And, of, mm-hmm, course, in Perryvale, Bonnie and I worked together in Perryvale Hall after I'd retired from school administration and some of the things in Rochester. I was with the Ag Society for a while, but then I was too busy. I didn't need another meeting.
Mm-hmm.
So I was still on council, and Perryvale Hall, they asked me to come. They needed people on the hall board, and so right away they nominated me as board, the chairman of the, mm-hmm. So we had to, the hall was just about ready to be condemned because the kitchen wasn't up to code, the bathrooms weren't up to code, the steps weren't up. And so we just started raising money, and we got grants here, and didn't, mm-hmm, and we raised over $200,000, and it is a beautiful hall now.
Yeah, it
We've
is.
Got acoustics in there. You've been in it, haven't
yeah.
you?
Yeah.
It's a nice hall. It's very, very nice.
Mm-hmm.
And the kitchen is up to code, and the bathrooms and the...
Yeah.
Yeah, and we put an overhang on the front, so it's the ice and snow doesn't run down your
right.
neck when you come out. But, mm-hmm. And we had lots of very good entertainers, like Brett Kissel we had a couple mm-hmm. of times, Dwayne Steele, who were some of the other ones? Well, we had Elvis there one time, and he was, or we had him twice. And
oh, wow.
He was very good. I forget what his name was, but he was down southern Alberta, but yeah, we had 300 people in there.
Oh, really? That Robbie time. Burns night was full.
That was Rochester, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was. No. Mm-hmm. And Rochester's had, mm-hmm. you know, I've been to many of their, like they've had Rhett Kissel as well mm-hmm. a couple of times there. And
right.
I had Ben Crane. You ever hear of Ben Crane?
I know the name, yeah.
He's a very funny
Isn't
guy.
That Country Christmas?
Yep.
Wasn't that at Perryvale? the country Christmas just before the pandemic.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, that was Duane Steele. And,
yes, that's right. Yeah, right. And the Edmonton guy. Yeah, I'll tell you that. I had...
Adam Gregory, yes. Yeah.
Oh, you were there. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, that was a bad night for me because I had gone in for a... I had to, about my bladder cancer, and they'd gone, done a check. And sometimes, and it was somebody new that was doing it. Dr. Rourke was a very good doctor, but he had a, somebody else doing it. And they, I think they put too much pressure on the water, and they must have forced it back into your, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Vas deferens or whatever.
You weren't feeling.
Anyway, so I went home, and I wasn't feeling well. And, ooh, man, I would just... I didn't stay that night. I was there, and I said a few words at the beginning, but I couldn't, or maybe I didn't, I don't know. But I had to go home, and I, the next morning I went up to see the doctor, and the doctor, he was a young doctor, Dr. Schaub. He said, my God, Larry, he took blood, and he said, boy, you're about that far from going septic, he said.
Wow.
So... actually, I'd gone up there first, and the doctor, I told the doctor, and it was a female, but she said, well, I'll just give you some more pills, some of those ciproflaxin.
Oh, okay.
Or for prostate stuff, I guess. And anyway, so, and never said anything else. She just getting, so I went home, and they were the wrong thing. I should not have been taken. And so, but I came the next week. I had to go up, and I was damn sick. And Dr. Schaub, he's from Black Labish, nice, good guy. And he said, and so he got me on the right stuff, and I forget what else they had to do to me. But anyway, when you go septic, that's something. A lot of guys don't make it.
No. No.
So anyway, but that was, and I, so I never said, but I just kind of listened for a while, and then I went home about 8 o'clock after the supper, I think. So anyway, but that's the sickest I was ever, I've ever been, eh? And anyway, but I've gone in a lot of times for those, for those checkups. Did I ever tell you what they did the second time they had to go, and they, like, first time I've had to wear a catheter for a while, and then, see, this is 18 years since I've had this bladder cancer.
Wow.
And I've gone in every 3 months, every dinner. But the second time when the cancer started to come back a little more, my doctor said, Larry, you've got to do something different. And we're going to try this. And he explained it to me. And he said, are you okay with that? You want to try it? I said, yeah, if you think it worked. Your doctor, Rourke, is a very good young doctor, yeah. And so what they do is they, I would go in and they would, I had to go to cross cancer 6 times in a row. And of course you got to go another time or two ahead to they prepare you or whatever, but, talk about it. And then, but anyway, what they do is they I lay off fluids, I guess, for a while. And I go in, and I would go in, and they would go in with a scope and they would take a siphon or whatever.
Oh, okay.
And take and then they would put a solution
back into your
back in, and it was live tuberculosis cells.
Really?
And those tuberculosis cells fight the cancer.
Really?
Yes. And so I would go in, and they would do that, prepare me. And then I'd go in. This was in the cross cancer. And then I'd go in, and then by start up my side, lay down, and let it at work on that side.
Right.
And then 15 minutes later, I'd roll to my stomach. And then 15 minutes later, I'd roll to my other side.
Okay.
And then on my back. And then I'd get up and go home. And I did that for, I think, 7 times. And then the doctor said, well, you know, he phoned or whatever, they phoned. and said, in 3 weeks, your next appointment to see how you... And I went in, and he went in, and he said, Larry, it worked.
Wow. Morning.
Isn't that something?
Isn't that something? That
he
is.
Said, he said, some people, it doesn't work at mm-hmm. all. And some, it really means you're one of the lucky ones, mm-hmm. he said. So.
I love science, but who says, I'm going to take TB and see if it'll fight cancer, right? Like, that's
isn't that amazing.
Amazing.
It is amazing.
Yeah.
You know, some of the things that they've come up with are just mm-hmm. in medical science. I mean,
yeah.
It changes every day.
Yeah.
It gets better every day.
Yeah.
Who would have ever thought that one day they'd be cutting your leg off here and putting a piece of...
Yeah.
Who would have ever thought
yeah.
that? You know, years ago, people just suffered that. And they died 20 years early because they were in such pain
exactly.
for so long.
Yeah.
I remember people, and they'd just be walking like this.
Yeah. Nowadays, yeah, I see people and I think, why haven't you got, like, we have the healthcare system.
I know.
It's not like the States, but...
I know.
They, you know...
Oh, you're so lucky in Canada.
Yeah.
Ooh, ooh, ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and some of that all started because of Agnes McPhail. She wanted to have healthcare. And of course, then Tommy Douglas
mm-hmm.
came in. And of course, Tommy Douglas was kind of guy. He was... Well, I think I said that at the Robbie Burns days.
Mm-hmm.
He was Canada's outstanding Canadian. And
yes.
Such and such.
Yeah.
And, of course, one thing about Tommy Douglas, they said, they used to go down there. He was a good politician. They used to tease mm-hmm. him about his height. And he said, down here, he said, they're supposed to measure from the shoulders up.
Oh.
He was a smart
guy. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So... But anyway, I started talking about that and that. And anyway, I don't know what else we could. But you know, I don't think there's anywhere in the world I could have gone and had a career like I did in Rochester, eh? Mm-hmm. Because it was an okay school. It was always a pretty good school, but they had principals there who didn't get involved, and one principal he had there he'd go to the bar every night in Rochester.
Oh,
and the last one was a fellow who he would come. He wasn't a community guy, and he would come in on Monday morning about get there just before noon. Then he'd read the paper, and then. And I think he only taught maybe one class or something. And then Friday afternoon, he'd be gone by noon.
No interest.
No. And so they weren't doing well academically, mm-hmm. and the student didn't have a great reputation when they went to Athabasca, and their sports programs and extracurricular programs were not good. And
mm-hmm.
and that took a little, quite a bit of a while. That takes a while to change that.
Mm-hmm.
An attitude, it's a whole new culture. And you know, to change things in the world or in a community, sometimes it takes two generations.
Mm-hmm.
But the students bought in. They liked the work. They liked the hard work. The mm-hmm. parents bought in. The staff bought in, and we were away. And we were and of course I got my bus driver's license, and then we could afford to. I made sure that every student had the opportunity to go to Athabasca and take those swimming lessons.
Mm-hmm.
And so by the time, when our students from kindergarten to grade 9, every one of them had those 10 levels of Red Cross. And,
good.
And you know, you can't make everybody love water.
No.
But you get, so they had water safety. And they,
yes.
they
very important.
And so, and I drive them
mm-hmm.
For 10 years, I guess.
Yeah.
I did. And it didn't cost us anything because we had the bus there. The county was very good
mm-hmm.
with us, and they left the bus there for me to use.
Oh, okay.
Otherwise, you know, they were having to send a bus down,
right?
Or me go up there, and
mm-hmm.
and so I never charged anything for my time or my mm-hmm. and oh gosh, I must have made 500 trips.
Wow.
You take in 20 years, and, you know, we'd go and play soccer in or go to cross country somewhere. Mm-hmm. But there wasn't too much cross country love. But in soccer, we'd go and play in Dap, we'd go and play in Jarvie, we'd go and play in Fawcett. We would go and play in, well, we hosted at home, or else we'd go and play in Athabasca, mm-hmm, or Boyle. And then, of course, volleyball, there was a home and home. Mm-hmm. And I quite often drove for those, although I didn't coach a lot of volleyball, but the basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And but we went to the ski hole.
Twatna.
It was the same thing, yeah, Twatna.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd take the students in for several years there. We took them in to the Bissell Center in Edmonton.
Oh, okay.
And we just to show them that
the other side.
The other side, yeah, and that they can make a difference. They can, mm-hmm, help these people see what and do their part for, mm-hmm, humanity, and drive in at Bissell Center, and then kids would go in and help. They would they'd take some food, and they'd help prepare the meal and serve, mm-hmm, the meal, and then clean up, and then we'd come home. But we would go so many basketball trips and so on. And I think I told you that we'd win the Athabasca tournament, the Boyle tournaments. Well, and we sometimes have our own, and Jarvie would have a tournament. And we'd win them on the West Hawk Tour. We'd win that. We'd win the Barhead tournament. We'd win this Warrenville tournament and the St. Albert tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Bonnie had, some very successful basketball teams. Mm-hmm. But it was because she got those kids from Rochester, and she was a good coach too. Mm-hmm. She had some kids from Athabasca.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they, our grade 9 kids and her grade, and she'd always have a few. But for years they didn't have anybody that. And she had to fight her way on to,
mm-hmm,
to coach, because there was a guy coaching there, and he said no, and the other coaches, the administration thought, and I don't know why, because Bonnie had played basketball, mm-hmm, with somebody outside there,
the cat.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
She played basketball for the Camp Pandas, but anyway, she, mm-hmm, went. But when she got those kids, holy doodle.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to, when they had the first game of the year, and they usually, Westlock would come and play Athabasca.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember this, when we had that real good bunch of girls. I think there was about 11 girls in grade 9, and, mm-hmm, not very many boys, but just about everyone that played basketball. But anyway, some of them went to Westlock.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them went to Athabasca, and so I went up and watched that game. I was kind of interested to see how the girls were doing. And there was four of the girls on the starting lineup in the Westlock team, mm-hmm, were Rochester girls, and five from Athabasca,
mm-hmm,
were Rochester girls.
Wow.
So, and you know, those girls, when they went through and played grade 10, 11, and 12 in, mm-hmm, Westlock, they went on and played college. I think there was, mm-hmm, 10 of those girls made college.
Really?
Team.
Wow.
One of them was Shauna Siemens, and she won the outstanding. She was the MVP of the whole league, the college league.
Oh, wow.
And of course, when our daughter Brandy was there,
mm-hmm,
she went, and she was, she went to, the first year she played at Grant McEwen, and she was a unanimous all-star. Yeah,
okay.
And then she only stayed the one year because she wanted to go, and she played UBC.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a co-captain of the team. And so she was very, 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 very good. You know, people could wonder, how in the heck could they do that?
Mm-hmm.
But we would play 40 games.
Mm-hmm.
And those girls, and I had them playing in elementary,
mm-hmm,
and it wasn't any extra work, but we'd go and play our elementary, we'd go and play DAP, or we'd go and, mm-hmm, play somebody else, and so by the time they got into grade 7, they had all been, and some of them in grade, well, our girls, when Brandy was in grade 5, she played junior high.
Oh, okay.
And Tiffany was in grade 6,
mm-hmm,
so they played, and we went 5 years in a row. So, mm-hmm, Brandy was in grade 5, so went 5, grade 6, 7, 8, 9. We never lost a game. We had 114 games.
Wow.
Never lost a game. But I absolutely wasn't. It wasn't I was all about winning. It's just people mm-hmm. wanted us to come and play them, and we played
mm-hmm.
them. I remember the Athabasca coach before Bonnie started there. He said, "You got a pretty good." He said, "I need some practice. Somebody mm-hmm. practice in Athabasca with my senior high girls." And I said, "Well, mm-hmm. why don't you come on down? Bring them on down here." Well, he came down our junior high. And then he was organizing a tournament in Athabasca. He knew somebody from Spirit River, so he had his Athabasca girls, a Spirit River girl, somebody. Get with you, and he said somebody dropped out. So he said, or maybe there was three teams, and then he invited a Rochester girl.
Mm.
Well, I said I only have eight players, mm-hmm. not very many. And but I said Riley had come home from Thailand, mm-hmm. and he brought a friend, and she'd never played basketball. She was an Australian girl.
Oh, okay.
But she was a good athlete, and I said, just for rebounding, can mm-hmm. I? Because I don't have enough girls, and.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, we end up winning the tournament. and she was, she'd never played basketball. She didn't score much, but she got rebounds and passed.
Right. right.
Anyway. So those were wonderful years. Anyway. When I was in university, I joined a fraternity, and it was called the Zeta Xi, and it was a kind of a haven for young guys who needed, things to do on the weekends and so on. It was kind of a home away from home for a whole lot of guys, and we had a lot of fun there. But one of the things that we did was we had to go to Songfest every year, and of course Zeta Xi, they would do a spoof of all the women's sororities. They were competing to be the best fraternity in the mm-hmm. and the sororities, and the men were as well. We were the, one year we were the Irish Water Women, and we were up there, we had a kick line up on the stage, right in front of the stage, and I never ever thought I'd be performing on the stage at the Jubilee Auditorium, but that was awesome. And anyway, that's one thing in university and that I really enjoyed. It was a place where you could go and get a good meal when needed, and on those weekends there was always something going on, but I couldn't... take it easy like the other fellows could, because I was involved in sports.
Did you guys have like a sorority house?
No, a fraternity house.
We
sure did, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where was that at?
That was right. It's all changed in there now. Mm-hmm. I think Hub is in there now.
Oh, okay.
That's all done there. See, this was in the 60s.
Right.
So okay. Everything has changed. And there was a girls' sorority right across the road, and there was another men's fraternity two houses down from us.
Okay.
But we all got along. It was a lot of mm-hmm. fun. We spoofed each other and so on. But anyway.
Who pledged you?
That was Roger Kangas. Your mom just looked him up, and he passed away. Mm. But he was a kind of a mover and a shaker. And he was head of the school board in Manitoba, St. Batal, I think it was the school. And anyway, and then the last I heard, he was having some trouble. I think they tried to. He was in over his head a little bit, maybe. Uh-huh. But it says on her book there that he just passed away, and he had family, and he and his mm-hmm. wife had a business going before. And then they gave that up. But anyway, so we'll leave that. The other thing I was going to talk about was, remember I mentioned the roads in Rochester, how we had so many students that went on to 50% for about a 12-year period there were going on to university and college and so on. And that was awesome. But we also had a Rhodes Scholar. And she, her name was Joanne Cave, and she lived in the Perryville area, and her dad did all my mechanicking work.
Cave is in
CAVE.
Okay.
Yeah. And she got the, it was about probably two and a half or 3 years, and is it Cambridge or Oxford? where the
Oxford.
Okay, Oxford. Okay, and so yeah, she it was about a $300,000-$400,000 touch.
Right.
Everything was paid for her. So no, and I'm not sure what she's doing now, but I do have a picture of home. She came home for Christmas time with her mom and dad, and there's a picture of I have a picture of me Santa Claus, and she's sitting on my knee. So, and I'm asking her what she wants for Christmas.
Right.
And her brother is still, I believe he's still, his name is Andrew. He is, and he went to, he was from Perryville in Mexico in Rochester.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't stay long in Rochester because the mom knew that she wanted them to do as well as they could and go as far as they could. But
mm-hmm.
So they were both very, they weren't geniuses, but they worked hard. And they
I don't know, to be a Rhodes Scholar,
yeah,
I think you have
I know,
to be pretty
yeah.
smart.
Yeah, you have to be pretty sharp.
Yeah. Way.
But anyway, but her brother, Andrew Cave, is he's a lecturer at McGill University. He's been there for about 10 years.
Oh, okay.
So those are a couple of real star students.
Right.
But they just went to Rochester for a while, and I knew them. I knew their mom and their dad well mm-hmm. and so on. And she asked me about it, and I said, yeah, if that's what you want to do, then... And she mm-hmm. They went to school at the Old Skona, and that was more like a private school, but
okay.
it was for students who were really interested in learning.
Oh,
and,
okay.
So that one. The other thing I was going to mention was about Hugh McLennan, and he was was the host for all of the trips we took with the Spirit of the West.
Right.
And he really appreciated one thing I did when we were in Australia and in front of the, and we went for a tour through the Sydney Opera House. And that's supposed to have the best sound effects of anywhere,
acoustics
of anything in the world.
Yeah.
And of course they, before we came, they had some huge stars. Elton John was there or something, and but anyway, we were standing and we had the full tour and we went down here and all over the place and,
mm-hmm.
and it was really something to see.
Mm-hmm.
But we were outside and we were our tour is pretty well finished, and I put up my hand to the tour guide and I said, you know, we have a gentleman here that's a pretty good singer and he's our tour guide and he loves to sing. Do you think we could? He could sing here at the opera. I mean, outside on the steps of the mm-hmm. opera. And she said, "Sure, you go right ahead." So I did, and he had. And I never talked to him about it before, mm-hmm. but he had a song by an Australian singer, and he sang it. And so he was so proud that he was able to tell people that he sang at the Sydney Opera House,
oh, wow.
and he had a standing ovation. Because we were all standing there with him on the steps, but he did a great job.
Oh,
in,
wow.
in water. So as we, so mm-hmm. at breakfast or when we went the next day, he said, "Larry, you're going to have to be my agent." I think.
How many trips do you think you've taken with him?
We have taken. We're taking one more this year. We're going to the Alaska trip, but yeah. I think it's a sixth one. We've
oh,
been
wow.
through Eastern Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And down into the States, the Maritime, and Boston, New York. And in New York, that's where we went to see the show Come From Afar. You know?
Oh, yeah.
And that was a wonderful one. It made us so proud. But,
mm-hmm.
Come to
from
be Canadian.
Is it Come From Away?
Come From Away. That's
yeah.
right. That's right.
Yeah.
And but the Americans were just, they just absolutely loved it. And mm-hmm. the Canadians that were there that night and went on Broadway, and I forget the name of the theater, but
mm-hmm.
It was, but Broadway is something else. Like
yeah.
when they're at night, those streets are fairly wide there, and but they're just wall-to-wall people, and they say it's a city that never sleeps.
Yeah.
And there's, oh my gosh, there's everything on the streets, mm-hmm. and you can hardly make your way. I remember trying to get there. So that was one. In Boston too,
mm-hmm.
Well, at the same time we were in Boston, and then we stayed about 3 days in New York, and that's really something. Although mm-hmm. I don't think I want to live there.
No,
but it was nice to see,
mm-hmm.
and we saw a lot. And we went to one day. Bonnie and I got downtown there, and we had to get back, so we didn't. And the bus route was was took longer. Mm-hmm. So we hired this guy. He had a rickshaw, a bike, and he was a Turkish student working his way through university. He was working on his master's degree there, and riding this bike. He was a Turkish fellow, didn't speak very good English, but man, could he wheel that thing. He could just pass it. And so that was quite the thing. Mm-hmm. But we did see a baseball game. We saw the Mets play.
Oh.
And so, but we had, it was a great trip, but I mm-hmm. But New York is, it's mm-hmm. it's not Athabasca, it's not no. Rochester, it's not Perryvale. So mm-hmm. so anyway, another one, we went through the Eastern Canada as well. One of the later ones we took was through the British Isles. We flew to Dublin and then toured the rest of Ireland and Scotland, and we went to Paris, and we went to London, and then back to down to Cork, and then back to Dublin. And so,
oh, wow.
Wonderful trip, beautiful, beautiful countryside, and mm-hmm. wonderful people, because they are fun lovers over there.
Mm-hmm.
And but they're sure happy to see Canadians, that's for sure. We went through the Panama Canal, oh. and that was a very educational tour, that's for sure.
You weren't on the ship that got stuck, were you?
No, we weren't. No. But that's really something that the from one side, you know, the sea level is sea level.
Mm.
But at your highest point, when you're going through those locks and you're going up, you're 270 feet above sea level, I believe it
wow.
is. That was one of the man-made wonders of the world.
Mm.
That's really something. And now, the next year after we were there, they widened the channel, the locks,
mm.
and the channel is bigger. They used to be able to haul the largest floating hauling those sea cans.
Mm-hmm.
They had, I believe, it was 5,400 sea cans on one. Now they can go through with 13,000.
Wow.
One container ship. Now, isn't that something?
Wow.
They could all everything that Canada needs, and when you're on one of those containers. So we did that. We've been to Alaska before. We're going again in a month. And that's a very nice cruise. So it's very, very, very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Depends on the weather a lot, but there's a lot to see and do. We stopped at White Horse and took the pass up on the railroad and Ketchikan, I believe it is, and Juneau, and we're going to, and the reason we're doing it, because Hugh McLennan, a wonderful fellow, he and his wife, and he's retiring from the host. He's got he had a kidney replacement, so he was on dialysis for quite a while, so he's going to relax a little more, stay at home and stay close to hospital. So
well, he's not a young man
anymore. No, he's not. He's 80, 82, I think.
Okay.
He was an Edmonton boy. He went to school at Vicomte when he was young. Yeah, he knew a lot of the same people I knew.
Okay.
So anyway, but he was thrilled about the Opera House. Anyway,
mm-hmm.
And where else have we been? Down through, down into Mexico, around the Big Sur, and mm-hmm. down through there. We've been to the Hawaiian Islands. We've been to, anyway, I think it's six. I think there's a seven coming up,
mm-hmm.
but it's been wonderful. We, you know, Bonnie and I got married, we had nothing.
Mm-hmm.
We had absolutely nothing. And we've still got most of it, 50 years later. No, we worked hard. We worked, and we had family, and we all worked together.
Mm-hmm.
We took apartments for a while, so we mm-hmm. could save up enough money to buy a house. And once we bought the house, then we moved to the farm, and mm-hmm. things started to grow. And a few years ago, we were completely out of debt, and we're still there. And mm-hmm. so... No, it's been wonderful, and I couldn't have found a better woman to do all that with. I'm telling you, she's been an angel for me, that's for sure. And I haven't been too bad of a husband either.
So. Oh, good.
She brags about me a lot, though. Anyway, I don't know about that. Anyway, I was going to talk about politics a little bit as well. Maybe I didn't mention, but I was on some very good committees when I was there. I was on Greater North, which looked after seniors' housing, mm-hmm. and I was there when they built the lodge in Athabasca and Lac La Biche. And then when I was the chairman of the board of our board chair of Greater North when they built the one in Boyle and now so I was there for all of them and I that was a wonderful group to be mm-hmm. with. Shirley Surgener has been the CAO there and she's not, you know Shirley I guess
mm-hmm.
she's
yeah.
done a wonderful job. She's
mm-hmm.
they've been very strict these last couple of years with COVID, and they haven't had many problems. There's only one person, I think, that had COVID, and so that's it takes a lot of hard work. But there was, there was problems. But Shirley and I dealt with them. I was 7 years. I was with, and I was with the Waste Commission. That was a very good group as well.
This is when you were county councillor?
County councillor, yeah. Right. Yeah, okay. And FCSS. And then I was on the library board, too, for many, many years. So I was not only the chairman of the library board in Rochester for 20 years, but then I was 10 years, I was with the Athabasca Library Board and the Elk Point all the time. What was that?
Northern Lights.
Yes. I was that for 6 years as well. So that was a wonderful group to be with. The other thing I went when I was a younger guy, and I was retired from wrestling, and I was coaching at Nate. But they chose an all-star one team. They had a group coming up from the United States. You ever hear of a group called Athletes in Action? They're a faith-based group,
okay.
but they play basketball, they wrestle, and so they kind of selected an all-star team from across Alberta. And Alberta at the time had a fellow there by the name of Michi Tanaka, who was a world champion, and he'd wrestled in Argentina when I was there, and I'd watched him wrestle, and he was very good. But he stayed and worked with, when he came back, he got encouraged to come to Alberta and work on a degree, and so he did, and he was the coach of the, you did all the coaching, and that's why they had quite a bit of, but I was coaching at Nate at the time, so they had a lot of success, but anyway, I was selected from Edmonton, and another fellow, Gord Birdie, I was retired, but I still stayed in shape, and so Michi, of course, he won his match, and I was the only other guy that never got pinned. I think I got beat 2-0 by a fellow American who was had been to the Pan American Games, and everyone else got pinned because they were very good.
Mm.
Not only were they religious, but they knew their craft. That's for sure. So I was kind of proud of that, mm-hmm. and I reffed. University intercollegiate wrestling at the intercollegiate championships, and I had my Canada A card. And when I was in, maybe I told you this before, but when we were wrestling and we were in Turkey, and they wanted to choose a national champion, and the other two fellows, they didn't want to have anything to do with reffing, even though they were refs.
Mm-hmm.
And so they said, because I'd done most of the coaching for the Alberta team, and so I ref this match between to select a champion in Turkey. And Turkey is very, very proud of their wrestling, and
okay.
it's a very important sport there. And so whatever call I made, there was a 50% of them booed and one way and one the other way. And so just about every call. But anyway, it ended up a draw, and so I got an ovation for my anyway. But I had worked at every part of wrestling, the actual wrestling itself when it began, and the coaching and the reffing and the competition and all that. So that was something I was pretty proud of as well. The other thing I was going to, you know, I was talking about music festival and how we took part and so on. And as an administrator, if I wanted somebody to do something, I better do it myself as well. So I did get involved in, and I coached, I've worked with a group from Rochester, and we performed at on the Nancy Appleby Theater. In drama, and so I always remember I was probably more nervous and perspiring more than I did in the biggest basketball group I coached. But it was really something to do that, and I'm proud that I did it. The other thing I did was at Speech Arts. That was at Nancy Appleby Theater, and I was teaching that particular group that year. There was grade 3-4, and I was down there directing these people, and I didn't really know what I was doing, but I did it because if I expected somebody else to do it, then I'd be. Right. And I remember the adjudicator when I finished and I was coming up, and she said. He looked at me and she said, "Man, you've got guts to do that," she said. I think she knew very well. And the other thing, I got I got a choir going in Rochester, and my two daughters were in there, but I really didn't know what songs to sing so I got Ida Edwards to come and help me, and we did very well. They sounded very well, and we did okay. So I was involved that way, but that was some of the things that we hadn't talked about. But there was one other thing. I know you asked me about teaching and administration and how things change in Rochester. Well, I do know that when I first came, that the teachers were very that at the end of the year for several years before I got there. The end of the year was handled differently, and they wrote their exams, and then there was, in the last day they just had a lunch or something, but the kids got the students got they brought their water guns, it was a gong show, and you couldn't control them. You had mob mentality, and they were, the teacher said they were just running around and you couldn't stop them, and they were just glad when the buses. And I said, well, I think we can fix that. So I made it the day when we had our awards day. Instead of having them October, we had them at the end of June. And so everybody dressed up, and we had a nice meal that day. Mm-hmm. And that took care of all that problem that they used to have with water and so on. Water guns and water fights and running all over the balloons. So along with that, we made it a grade 9 graduation. And so the grade 9 dressed up, and they were there, and the nice things were said, and the awards were given to them. And so that was one of the things that really changed Rochester School. After that, it was all about, about doing as well as you possibly could, and leaving with pride. Mm-hmm. And there was always tears at the end of the year, and so... We knew we were.
But good tears, not.
Good tears, absolutely.
Yes. Not, I'm so frustrated with these kids.
No. No, and the other thing, too, is if you were finished with the awards were given at the right time. Instead of when you come to October, some children have moved away. They're gone. And it doesn't mean they can't remember, did I win that or that? But here it was the last day, and the parents came, and there was a house right full, the gym was full. I was the MPC, and I did that for 24 years, I guess, 23 years, and then 2 years in Athabasca. So I had my share of MCing. And the other thing about MCing is I think I was telling you earlier about getting up and saying things, but I MCed that and just about every... like in Prairieville and Rochester, just about every function that went on, I had to be the MC. So I got my share of that, but I liked it. I loved it, and people had respect, and so I didn't mind doing that at all. And because it was part of the job.
Right.
It was part of the job. So I don't think there's... And that just about covers everything that, you know, as I was talking earlier before about over 50% of our students would go on to college, university, and a lot of them would always come back. And I was proud of my own children, because when they graduated and were gone, came back, well, I think four of them came and spoke at the grade nine, or the awards day in grade nine grad. Now, and that, I was pretty proud of that, because mm-hmm. Not many students do that, will do that.
Yeah.
But they all, through, because of public speaking, because of 4-H, they didn't mind. And and their mom did it a little bit, and I did it all the time. Mm-hmm. And so they felt that was part of their job. And so four of them did. And the other one was not around at that time ever. But she was a good, very, very good speaker too, so... So anyway, that just about covers everything, and I don't know. I think I don't think there's anything more